All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is September 24th, 2021, and it's the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee meeting. Just some updates. We're going to defer item number 3, defer item 6, and number 7, okay? And have not gotten any requests for any more deferrals or withdrawals, so those will be the only ones, and it looks like we'll just go in the order of the agenda, with the exceptions of items 4 and 5 that I was requested to take a little bit later as folks are coming to the meeting. So we'll take up item number 1 first, which is a discussion regarding the review of the Julia Tuttle Bus Rapid Transit project. And I know, Commissioner Samuelin, this is yours, and you've been working hard on it. Do you want to tee this up?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just briefly, you know, we're talking about connectivity. The bus rapid transit is an important part of the SMART plan. The city has actually committed some money as part of a cooperative venture. And I'm just going to sort of paraphrase my recollection. The last time we were here is that our city team was not 100% satisfied with what was going to happen on the Julia Tuttle. We were hoping to engage further with the county. I think we sort of volunteered, if there's something we need to do, please tell us what that is. And so, Jose, what I would ask is if you could expand on that a little with any new news, and how do we advance the process in the most constructive way? Thank you.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. Jose Gonzalez, Transportation and Mobility Director. Good morning and happy Friday. As you correctly pointed out, Commissioner, there are two aspects to this item. There's a long-term BERT, Bus Express Rapid Transit, which the county is proposing to connect from Golden Glades Interchange in Miami-Dade County over to the Arlington Heights Metrorail Station and then east to Miami Beach. On our island, it would serve Mount Sinai, it would serve Fontainebleau, and it would serve the city center area, Miami Beach Convention Center area. So that's the long-term. The concerns that you pointed out were relative to the short-term, very short-term. As a matter of fact, the county anticipates starting this service either later this month or next month, and it's what they are branding as the Tuttle Shuttle, the Tuttle Shuttle. The Tuttle Shuttle, our concerns that you alluded to, are they pertain to the limited service span associated with the route. The route, as it's being proposed by Miami-Dade Transit, would only operate from the bus stop at Biscayne Boulevard and 36th Street over to Mount Sinai. So it would be, in essence, just a shuttle going back and forth from Biscayne and 36th to Mount Sinai. So we did have concerns with the limited service spans, the lack of connectivity. Biscayne and 36th Street is, by no stretch of the imagination, a hub, if you will. So it's just a bus stop. So these are concerns that we have transmitted to Miami-Dade County staff. We've been working with them. However, they, last update that we received, and by the way, they are on the call. Peter Halliburton is representing the county, and he's on the call if we have any specific questions for him. But the latest update that we received is that they will launch this Tuttle Shuttle, I believe, later this month, as they're proposing it from Biscayne and 36 to Mount Sinai. Our last conversation with them was just a few days ago. We've asked that, because they do have a limited budget, and they've cited the budget as the main constraint. We've asked them if they could, within that budget, look at another type of service. So instead of using county buses, county bus drivers, perhaps privatizing the service, using a smaller vehicle, as long as it can accommodate the demand, to try to reduce the cost, the hourly cost of the service, and with the goal of, I think what we all wanted with the Tuttle Shuttle demonstration service is for it to mimic that long-term service, the long-term BERT, which is still a couple years away, and that's the one that you know, it's the regional route that goes from Golden Glades over to Miami Beach. We think it's a very productive route for our city. It will bring a lot of our workforce that lives in that part of the northern part of town and has to commute on a daily basis.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I may. Two questions, and that's very, very helpful. And maybe if my colleagues are okay, we'll let Peter give us the headline on this. But question one, assuming the service is in place and you show up at Mount Sinai, are we prepared with our trolley system to then sort of intersect so someone gets off at Mount Sinai and then can do that? Do we need to do anything in that? Is that already in place and that's a good connection?
That connection is already in place, Commissioner. We serve Mount Sinai.
Okay.
We go into the campus and
right.
serve Mount Sinai. Obviously, we are, as you all know, operating a reduced service level because we have budgetary constraints as well. So we're in a reduced service environment. The wait times used to be in the 15-minute frequency. We're now in the 30-35-minute okay. service frequency.
But we do have the connection. No change, no policy, no funding. We have something in place. Second question,
place.
I know the city is a partner for the longer-term project for the Tuttle Shuttle. Are we providing any dollars funding in any way?
So we haven't had that conversation with the county in a while. The last time that we had a conversation about our set-aside, we set aside, if you recall, a few years back, about $5.1 million.
Right.
That was for our 50% match for the demonstration of the long-term BERT from Golden Glades
sure.
to Miami Beach. That was the intent behind that set-aside. Obviously, what they're doing with the Tuttle Shuttle is not that. It's a more limited type of service. But in the context of the BERT, which is still probably a couple years away, it's still 2023, so it's still a couple years away. Last I recall, the City Commission did set aside $5.1 million as a contribution for that service.
Right, but for the long term. We're not part of the Tuttle Shuttle. That's really a county-driven initiative.
Correct.
We haven't approved anything for that.
That's correct.
Okay. With that, colleagues, what I would like to do, if it's okay, if Peter from the county has made himself available, hopefully he's heard the conversation, it might be great to get the 50,000-foot view. Tell us, what is this Tuttle Shuttle? And he's probably heard the dialogue, and if he could respond, if that's acceptable. Peter, we'd love to hear from you.
Yes, good morning. Hi, hope you can hear me.
We can hear you, Peter.
Great, and you can see my screen?
Yes, yes, we can.
Okay, great. So I did hear the discussion, and so look forward to going through here a couple of slides, some of which I think are familiar to most folks here, so some of this is a recap. This slide shows the map at the top, just the extent of this concept of bus on shoulder, which would serve both the interim Tuttle Shuttle project, but ultimately the BERT North Express. So the concept here is to bypass congestion and keep the bus moving quickly to improve travel times, but actually more importantly, travel time reliability, so folks have confidence they'll be at work on time. This occurs when traffic speeds drop below 35 miles an hour, and then the bus would be constrained to a maximum of 35 miles an hour in the shoulder, but that would, you know, again, improve their travel times and reliability. There are a number of accommodations as part of the design, including signs and enforcement. And then the other piece, I think everybody here has heard before, there's two phases. In the initial phase for the pilot, the bus is to use the outside shoulder, but FDOT is doing a construction project to improve the inside shoulder for the long-term use following 2023. As was discussed here. This slide showed what Jose spoke about, this tunnel shuttle in the interim would operate just literally across the causeway back and forth, beginning in the fall of this year. And that would be, you know, a short period of service as a pilot before the construction project begins for that inside shoulder, which would be just about a year from now, next year. This slide shows that ultimate project that connects from Golden Glades all the way down to the convention center area with a number of interim stops, as we've talked about before. It takes the express lanes, goes west for a bit to Arlington Heights, then across to Mount Sinai and down the beach. This table shows the service elements for both the interim tunnel shuttle and then the ultimate Beach Express North project. Service from 5 a.m. to midnight. In the short term, that's a 15-minute frequency for the tunnel shuttle. The ultimate is to operate at 10-minute peak time frequencies. And you can see a ridership estimate that we've had from the modeling in the final row here. Another element is transit signal priority. So once it's crossed the causeway, at these congested signal locations, signal priority will help keep the bus moving through those signals with a minimum of delay. Three locations are identified as shown in the green blobs on the map here. this slide then shows these cost estimates, again, both for the short-term and the long-term projects in terms of capital for the buses and the O&M operating costs. And then also for the ultimate project that includes an upgrade at that parking lot at Mount Sinai Medical Center. So that is a brief kind of recap of the projects and the timeframes. We've got our project manager and public information officer contacts here. So that's the update. The other thing to mention is that our client at DTPW, GBN, I believe, is on the call with us and may have some insight there as to the question Jose had on an alternate pilot. So, Jeff, don't mean to put you on the spot, but I believe Jeff's with us. And certainly, I'm happy to answer any questions based on that preliminary.
Fine. I have one question, one comment, and then I'll yield to my colleagues. What is your best estimate when the service will begin?
From my understanding, it would be part of the November pick at DTPW. So that's the last I heard on that subject.
Okay, thank you for that. So my encouragement, and we appreciate the partnership as always with the county, my encouragement to the county and my encouragement to our city is really to get the word out. This is meant to be a demonstration project. It's not the full solution that we're looking for, but we understand it's a pilot. Let's dial up the messaging. Let's tell people they can get across the causeway with public transportation. They can hop on the trolley, and then let's see how it goes. That's it for me. Mr. Chair.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for spearheading this effort. I know you've been pretty tireless about this, so thank you. Jose, thanks. Fine job. Okay, great. We have item number two. It's my item. I'm not sure who wants to present, but it's an update on our Economic Development Department's steps to streamline the business permitting process, and then also to help improve business retention and attract new business. And then what I'm going to do, just because it's also my item and it's related, we'll take up item number 11 because they're related. Okay. So, Raquel, good morning.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Commissioners. This is Raquel Williams, Economic Development Director, for the record. We last presented this item in May, and what's different today is that we are recommending two applicants for the Job Creation Incentive Program, which was authorized by the City Commission on March 17th, and we'll dive into that a little bit later. Today, I wanted to highlight some of our efforts in revitalizing the targeted areas and increasing investment. Particularly, our department has been very focused on getting the North Beach CRA approved at the county level, and that occurred, of course, as you recall, in July of this year. We also had a breakthrough with our vacant storefront cover program, which for the first time in the two-year existence of this program, we have a participating property coming out of North Beach where we'll have 2,000 square feet being covered, and so we're really proud of that. We've had some struggles and challenges with getting participation in the various neighborhoods of the city beyond South Beach, so we're very excited about participation in North Beach. The 41st Street streetscape plan is moving forward as the commission approved negotiations for the RFQ for design and architectural services. We also continue to work with Bernard Zyskowicz and his team of consultants on the Art Deco Cultural District design vision concept plan, and more on that will be coming in the near future. The Collins Park Artist Workforce Housing Project also moves forward with HPB approval being received this past June. The developer has submitted for building permits in early September and anticipates financial closing in December. At that point, that will trigger us to be able to execute the lease agreement for the ground lease. The final phase of the Collins Park Cultural Arts Facility lease negotiations continues, and we plan to bring that lease forward to the City Commission very soon. This lease did receive approval from the Planning Board in July, and so we're excited about bringing that project forward as well. The Class A office RFP has now been on the street for approximately 3 months, and we have received a lot of interest. The RFP was sent to 50,000 suppliers and emailed directly to 185 vendors. We are aware that 158 vendors have opened the RFP and viewed it. We held a pre-submittal informational meeting in July, and 39 external attendees were present. We also allowed for questions to be asked, and we received 39 questions, and we are preparing an addendum to respond to those questions shortly. We partnered with the Marketing and Communications Department to invest in a digital marketing campaign to get the word out about the RFP, and that campaign began in early August, and it's a 10-week campaign scheduled to end just about a month before the RFP is due. To date, we've received about 400,000 impressions, and that campaign is very successful, as we know that 92% of the traffic going to the Lincoln Road Bids page is coming from our ads that we have put out digitally. We also wanted to highlight the Emergency Small Business Grant Program that we have ongoing using Community Development Block Grant coronavirus funding. We have 14 firms or companies that have received grants of up to $10,000, and we also have 18 businesses or companies that have received grants of up to $20,000. Those grants that grant program continues to be open. We accept applications on a rolling and continuous basis, and we assess applicants on a first-qualified, first-served basis. We have also collaborated with our building department, planning department, and fire department on the expedited plan review and permitting incentive program that was also authorized in March of this year by the City Commission, and we've seen a lot of success with this program. We have several companies that are currently going through the process or have expressed interest in moving to our city and hopefully utilizing this incentive. Many companies have commented that they haven't received this kind of personal concierge service anywhere that they've been, and they're very excited. They have compared Miami Beach to other places where they have opened up shop, and they said nothing is quite like the service they've received in the city of Miami Beach. So I'm happy to report on that. We are increasing our marketing and communications and our engagement. We started a monthly newsletter in June, and we have seen tremendous growth in readership and our click-through rate. And we are excited about what we're planning with our marketing and communications team in terms of public relations and marketing efforts to position Miami Beach as a business destination. Now, at this time, I'd like to focus on the Job Creation Incentive Program applicants. As you recall, this is a performance-based incentive that requires a minimum of 10 jobs that are relocated or created in our city at 125% of the average wages for Miami-Dade County or the state of Florida, whichever is higher. It is a four-year grant or incentive for companies that are new to market. It is a three-year opportunity for existing companies that are wishing to expand. So today we have GMF Capital and Melvin Capital, both financial services firms. GMF Capital is an investment management firm, and Melvin Capital is an investment advisory firm. Both of these firms are slated to occupy 1674 Meridian, a property not very far from here that was recently repositioned as Class A. So I did want to highlight that the inventory of Class A office is very important. We see that the companies coming here are seeking these types of buildings to set up shop. GMF is setting up their headquarters, and Melvin will be having a regional office here. GMF has a five-year lease, and Melvin a 10-year lease. We are excited about GMF's commitment to hire 20 employees in year one and 25 over a four-year period. So beyond that first year, they would add an additional five. Melvin Capital will hire 10 in the first year and approximately over the 4 years, 30 employees. The average wages are $100,000 and $150,000 respectively. We do have David Curd, the COO of Melvin Capital, on the line, and if you would indulge him, I think he'd like to make a few comments.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I'm David Curd. I'm the Chief Operating Officer here at Melvin Capital. I just want to say thank you to the city of Miami Beach. Amber and Raquel have been so helpful. I don't really know how to describe the difference in feeling coming from New York City, where, you know, it's a very hostile environment towards businesses. But the programs you've implemented in Miami Beach and basically the open arms with which you've welcomed us, it's just completely refreshing. And we think it's incredible. We tell everybody that we speak with about just how it's such an incredible atmosphere. So thank you. We're incredibly excited to get our office open, hopefully in January, and get the ball rolling.
Well, David, this is Commissioner Arreola. If you don't mind, next time you're on CNBC or one of those networks, repeat everything you just said, so we get more of your folks coming down here to South Florida and Miami Beach in particular. And thank you for the kind words, and we're excited to have you open up shop here in Miami Beach. If you don't mind, would you mind just sharing with us your selection process as you looked at Miami Beach versus other communities here in South Florida, and why you settled on this particular space, and what you found available out in the market?
Yeah, so the selection process really, it kind of started with our boss, our founder, Gabe Plotkin, was moving down to Florida. We did explore a little bit sort of the Palm Beach area, but really, you know, I like to describe when I first spoke with some of our folks who started moving down on a temporary basis, and I expected them to say, oh my goodness, the tax savings are so incredible. You know, you have to move down. And they wouldn't even bring up tax savings until like the sixth or seventh reason why they love living down there. So it's just people are so happy. It's a much more kind of open atmosphere. Obviously, the weather trade in the winter versus New York City is an easy trade for anybody to make when you're playing, you know, sports outside on a Saturday morning in February. But, you know, we looked around in Miami Beach. We feel like we found an incredible space that we're building out and hopefully about to start construction there. And so, like I said, we couldn't be more excited.
Thank you.
I have a question. Yeah, thanks, David, for the comments. We really appreciate the kind words. I'm just wondering, though, since you lived through this, is there any part of the process that you could give us some suggestions on ways we might be able to improve the experience?
Well, to date, no. I will caveat that by saying we are currently in the permitting process right now. So I might, in a couple of weeks, have some more comments. To give you an idea, and I don't say this sarcastically, to give you an idea of what the 10-day permitting process means to us, you know, in New York City or Connecticut, I feel like if you go to get a permit and you say you're a financial services firm, they say, well, you know, for most firms, it's 3 months, but for your business, we'll do it in 6 months. So it's just the atmosphere and the attitude could not be more opposite. So I can check back with you in a couple of weeks if I have further thoughts, but to this point, there are no improvements I would suggest.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I want to echo your comments. David, thank you and congratulations. We're thrilled to have you as a former New Yorker who found that to make the move from the 212 to the 305, that's all goodness. You took the words out of my mouth when you said you were going to tell all your friends. That's really what we want you to do, and we are very appreciative of that. We are a very welcoming community. I have one follow-up on the question Mr. Chair asked, which I think was very smart, about your decision process. And you mentioned Palm Beach County, a fine place. And then you must have gotten to the view of you wanted to be in Miami-Dade County, which there's lots of good options. So if we could drill the next level of detail, as you thought you wanted a 305 area code, you picked Miami Beach, thank you. But there were other good options in Brickell and downtown. How did you sort of sort through how Miami Beach was different than those other places? You're going to help educate us.
Sure. The first part was our boss, right, and our founder, he settled down there. But really, if you think about our firm, we've got a lot of fairly young employees, I'd say, you know, kind of mid to late 20s, early 30s. And when we talked about different parts, I'd say the enthusiasm for them to relocate when we spoke about Miami Beach versus other areas, you know, like you mentioned, around Miami Beach, and specifically, obviously, in Palm Beach County, the enthusiasm to relocate was just far higher. And so that's kind of made the decision for us. It was really pretty straightforward after that.
Thank you for that. Welcome. We look forward to seeing you. And please do keep telling your friends.
Yeah. One thing, absolutely. David, if you do, for whatever reason, encounter, you know, a slowdown, hopefully you have all of our contact information. If not, you can get all of our emails off of the county, the city website. So please reach out. We want to make sure that we help businesses that are relocating, you know, have a good experience in going through the permitting process. Can I ask you, in terms of if you had to expand your office footprint, do you have a sense of your ability to do that here in Miami Beach, whether it's in your current building or elsewhere? Because what we're wrestling with, we have a view that we don't have enough Class A office space in Miami Beach, and you know, we're going to embark on an effort to increase that. What's your sense of the demand for Class A office space generally, and specifically in Miami Beach, and then you know, your ability to grow in Miami Beach?
Yes. Yeah, so as of this point, we do not have the ability beyond the full floor that we're building out at 1674. I would echo what you said. We looked around and there just wasn't a lot of availability in Class A. You know, like you said, it does sound like there's more coming. So down the road, should we need to expand? From what I understand now, we're building out the fifth floor. There's another tenant building out the fourth floor of our building, and we're on the top floor, so we can't go up or down at this point. So I think it would have to be another building. They're just, you're kind of like you said, there wasn't a lot of availability and there's a lot of demand, and things were being snapped up fairly quickly. So as of right now, I think we're in a good place capacity-wise, probably for the next 4 or 5 years. Post that, we might need to look for a larger space.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
If I could just say one more thing, Raquel and Amber have been incredible. They're so proactive. They're always in touch with us. So our hat's off to them. They've been very, very strong partners.
Well, thank you for those words, and I'm sure they appreciate it, and that's what we want to hear too. So good job, Raquel.
If I could just add, Mr. Chair, the preliminary review that the planning and building departments are conducting, they're very extensive, and they have committed to assisting us in this program, and we really value and appreciate all of their assistance in this effort. At this time, since she wasn't formally introduced, I'd like to call up Ms. Amber Tarak, my new assistant director for economic development. She joined the city a few months ago.
All right, come on up, Amber. Welcome.
Just say hello.
That's a great introduction.
Thank you so much.
So Amber has been working to help us execute some of our goals and get the department at the staffing level that we need to have it at, and I'm very happy to have had her join our team. I do want to formally ask for your recommendation for these applicants for the Job Creation Incentive Program so that we may bring this forward to the City Commission, preferably September 30th, so we can expedite the process and get these companies under contract.
And just for the record, so how much are each being granted?
Sure. So the incentive allows for up to $60,000 per year. So for each of these firms, since they're new to market, that would be a four-year period that they have the opportunity to receive this. Now, based on their preliminary estimates of their job creation, we know that they're not necessarily going to hit the $60,000 mark, but we don't want to penalize them for doing better. So, for example, if they exceed that job creation threshold, we are going to award them the incentive, but it's calculated about a year later. So it's a performance-based incentive. So whatever they tell us now, that's great. But what we want to see is proof. We're going to be looking at their payroll. We're going to be identifying, you know, that they have met the requirements of the program before we calculate what their incentive would be. So in no way would it exceed $60,000, but for each of these firms, we're probably looking in the area of maybe $30,000 unless they do much better. And that's a per year amount.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Raquel, I'm assuming that this recommendation is fully in line with the ordinance, the policy we've set forward, and that it is the recommendation of the city administration to proceed. Is that accurate?
That is accurate. And I do want to highlight that because these applicants are also participating in our expedited plan review and permitting program, they have already identified that they are going to be coming to the city. So we're not going to punish them for taking advantage of our incentive for expedited plan review, in which we want to see proof that they're going into a Class A office building. What we want to avoid is for landlords to try to utilize this in order to get their spaces built out and then turn around and use it for non-tech or non-financial services firms. So we like to see proof with a lease or a letter of intent. Both of these firms have provided their lease agreement with Integra and Constellation, who the building is represented by, so we're confident that they will be utilizing the space and are in line with the resolution.
I would just say, colleagues, often we talk about conceptual issues and we wonder what the impact is. I think our focused discussion on diversification, the movement that this body made to put these incentives in place is yielding results. So I'm actually very pleased with this. I will move it as recommended by the administration.
I'll second it.
Okay, great.
Oh,
what happened?
I'm so sorry. We do have representatives from GMF Capital.
I was
going to
ask you that question.
They weren't on before, but we have Jared Friedman, the managing director.
I was going to ask, do we have anybody from GMF? We'd love to hear from them and welcome them to our city.
That's Jared.
We'll give him a few minutes.
Hi, I don't know if anybody can hear me. I was trying
we can hear you.
There.
Welcome, Jared.
Hey, guys. Thank you. Look, I apologize for dialing in late. That's my mistake. We had a conflict and tried to make it as soon as we could. I want to obviously extend our gratitude to the city. We're thrilled about the relocation. We're really excited to move into the office. The city's been extremely accommodating thus far. Everyone we've worked with has been fantastic. A few of our team members have bought homes on the beach. And we're looking to grow the team exponentially. We're in the market for new hires now to join our team as soon as we move into the space. And we're really thrilled about the opportunity to expand. As we've grown over the last 5 years, the new expansion will obviously be Florida and the Southeast, and that specifically being Miami Beach. So we're thrilled with the opportunity and want to thank everybody and appreciate, obviously, the accommodation and taking us into consideration here.
Welcome to Miami Beach. When do you guys think you'll open your office?
Our plan was initially next month. I think due to some delays with materials and getting this space built, it's probably going to be closer to the end of the year. But we anticipate at some point in 2021 moving into the space.
Great. Well, let us know, and if you need anything that the city can help you with in terms of helping you in any way expedite things, we're here to help.
We appreciate that, and the city's been nothing but helpful thus far, and you guys have really been fantastic, so thank you, and we appreciate everything thus far.
Great. Thank you, Jared. This is Commissioner Salmon. I just want to ditto Mr. Chair's comments. We are excited to have you. We thank you for making this decision. We hope you tell all your friends how much fun you're going to have here and how much good business you're going to do in this business-friendly environment. I want to pick up on a smart question my colleague asked to the last discussion we had. Just give us the quick headlines on how you thought about your selection process and how you landed in Miami Beach.
Sure, of course. So the focus was really based on where we could grow our business. We're primarily an registered investment advisor with SEC, but primarily focused on the real estate sector. And for us, it's about fundamentals growth, employment growth, population growth. Where are young people moving? Really, where is the next place that we see a tremendous amount of upside and growth in the fundamentals and demographics from an income perspective? And of course, the other factors I mentioned, population, employment, just economic growth and upside. And we targeted Florida for that specifically. And then within the state of Florida, where did we see the most opportunity to grow our business and really find and retain talent? And that was an obvious decision to be in Miami Beach and be a little more boutique-y and differentiated from perhaps the main and main financial sector that's not on the beach. We wanted to really separate and differentiate ourselves that way. And we found our way to the beach and looked for the best office space we could find. And I think it's really going to be a fantastic opportunity to grow the business.
Thank you for that response. And as Mr. Chair indicated, we hope that our city administration will treat you in the way that they are describing and expect, and we fully are confident of that. But we are at your disposal if there are any issues. Our emails are there. You can find us very easily. And we're here to support our administration to make your welcome as positive as possible. Congratulations and good luck on the expansion.
Yeah, and I'll just add.
Thank you so much,
Jared, as well as David. If he's still watching, in Melvin, you both selected a really great building, and maybe just as important, the location that you selected. You're very wise, and I don't know if you know all that's going to be happening in that area. Hopefully, in the near future, in the next couple of years, we're going to be doing a massive renovation of Lincoln Road. There's some new boutique hotels are going to be opening along Lincoln Road, and God willing, we'll have some new Class A office space in the coming years being built there as well. A new convention center hotel. There's a lot going on in the area, so you're all very smart for what you selected, not just in Miami Beach, but your location. Your early adopters, I think, all of your friends that are going to Wynwood are going to regret that. So good choice.
Well, we couldn't agree more, and we don't think of ourselves as too smart, but happy to hear a gentleman as smart as yourself approve of our decision. So we appreciate it, and we're looking forward to it.
Great. David, anything? Okay. Have a great day. Raquel, is that the end of your update on this item? Well, congrats to you and Amber. Fine job and nice presentation. That was the only action you needed from us with respect to the grants, correct?
That's correct.
That's the only action item. Colleagues, any questions for Raquel on the other initiatives she has going? I want to talk to you just about a couple things you wrote up. Talk to me a little bit about the communication strategy that we have around this. Like, we just heard a great story. I hope, obviously, it's recorded. We have great news clips. You know, hopefully you're working with Melissa to turn this into a nice story. I strongly encourage us to Absolutely. Take advantage. Some so, great things were said. Talk to us about communications. You have some other stuff here about, you know, just the vacant office space and what we're doing, the vacant storefront cover program. And I know, Mark, that's been a big thing for you. Everything I've seen, that's going well. Other things you want to talk about that are in your memo, which is very well put together, you want to highlight or get some direction on?
I can begin a discussion of our communication strategy. So one of the things that we're trying to do more of is toot our own horn, you know, whatever that is, a big success story, something small, it doesn't matter. We need to be sharing the good news about what's happening here in the city of Miami Beach. And we started with our monthly newsletter, which, you know, we're getting more and more subscribers, and that's going to both folks here in the city and folks outside of our city, because many people here don't know what's happening, and we need to get the word out. Our communications team has been working with us to steadily prepare press releases and issue those, and we've been able to get some features. I've added that as an attachment here, both press releases and
bit,
some...
If you don't have, sorry, pardon? I don't mean to interrupt yes. you, but talk to us a little bit about that. If you're not prepared, then next time let's sure. talk about it, maybe bring Melissa or someone in. Like, where are we communicating? And specifically, since these are financial firms we're talking about here, and maybe we'll talk about high tech, you got to go where those readers are, right? So whether it's, you know, like I mentioned CNBC, but Wall Street Journal and all the other financial publications, you know, are we targeting those to get in front of the eyeballs of the decision makers of the types of firms we're trying to bring down?
So the answer is yes and not yet. Okay. The yes part is that, excuse me, with the Class A Office RFP digital marketing campaign, we have targeted those publications. So in here you've seen, you know, some of the locations of the folks that we've been able to access based on the impressions and the click-throughs. But we have publications that we are getting our digital ads in online. So we know that we're hitting those demographics. We plan to do the same thing, not just for Class A office, but just Miami Beach in general. Hey, this is a destination for business. So we're going to be using a targeted marketing campaign. And, you know, with the approval of the budget, hopefully on the 30th, we do have some resources set aside for just that purpose. So that is something that we have planned to do. We don't have the budget right at this moment, but we will come October 1st.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you guys feel, but I'm definitely open to giving you the budget you need to roll this out and attract more business. I think it's imperative as this is part of the Ocean Drive conversation we're having, as we're trying to rebrand and reposition, you know, what are we doing on this side to make that happen? So, you know, I don't, what do you guys want to do with this in terms of like a communication strategy? Because it covers so many different areas for us, whether we want to have this in finance or somebody wants to put on the agenda for a full-blown discussion at a commission meeting. Because as we try to rebrand and do a lot of things we're talking about, what is the actual official communication strategy? Because this is, I think, the path to success. We're going to be talking about the Aspen Festival that's going to be coming in March. You know, getting that in the communication to Wall Street as Wall Street decision makers are thinking about relocating to Miami Beach, mm-hmm. you know, all of these things play in together. We need a comprehensive plan for that. You know, I don't know how you guys or where, what venue you want to do that, but I think it's important that we do it.
Let me pick up. I think this is extremely important, and I want to add my congratulations to Raquel, Amber, and the team. This is really exciting, and we have a lot of energy and passion because this is part of what we're trying to do, and we're making progress. So to the specific question, Mr. Chair made a couple comments I want to pick up on. For the communications, one, you know, I have every reason to believe the budget item that you're asking about on Thursday is highly likely to be approved. I'm fully supportive of it, so we can check that box. I sense some interest from the chair, and I obviously have some interest to maybe get to the next level of detail on what the strategy is. And so perhaps, Mr. Chair, we could ask Raquel when she might have enough of the meat of it, perhaps bring it to this committee where we can vet, contribute, and then bring to the full commission. That would be my process suggestion in terms of communication.
I like where you're going with that. Do you want to add?
Yeah. Let me add a couple of things. So to the chair's question about strategy, on are you working with Melissa? Do you guys have a plan on how we're going to roll out these stories? Because they're great stories, and we need to get some national attention on those. Do we have any immediate plans?
I'm going to invite my colleague in the Marketing and Communications Department, okay. Jennifer Sianis, who has been working with us on this.
Putting you on the spot.
And it's not just marketing. We're also formulating our PR strategy. We really do want some organic, unpaid exposure to complement whatever digital marketing that we pay for. So go ahead, Jen.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Commissioners. I'm so excited to be here. It's my first time in
hey,
5
pressure.
Years, so I'm so happy to be here, and I'm so happy to be working with Raquel and Amber on this very important initiative. We helped them out with their RFLI for the Lincoln Lane project in January, and then, of course, now with the RFP. And as Raquel mentioned a moment ago, it's performing above average, so we're so excited. Average click-through rates for this kind of campaign is 0.05. We are at 0.12, and we are hitting all of those very important publications that are important to our target audience that you mentioned. The same plan, a little bit broader, would go towards our business attraction campaign. So one of the things that we're doing, which is very important, is we're seeking outside firms, marketing firms and PR firms that specialize in this kind of project. So we've worked together to do the creative brief. We've identified, we have about 25 agencies in our pool. We're doing it in phases because nobody needs 25 proposals. That's a lot. So we started with 10. This is a mix of marketing and PR firms. And we are receiving proposals as we speak. So we'll be gathering next week to take a look at those proposals and whittle them down.
And without calling the names of any of the firms, we have looked at firms that are currently providing services to organizations in the city of Miami Beach or have had some input into any of our previous campaigns. We want to make sure that we are leveraging our resources. Thankfully, we've worked very well with the Lincoln Road bid to get the word out, and you know they have a press machine over at the Lincoln Road bid, and we have been able to capitalize on some of their efforts because they're mutually beneficial to both the bid and to the city of Miami Beach. One thing I do want to highlight is that the city will be undertaking an overall branding initiative through the Convention and Visitors Bureau. And so what we are doing now in the interim is not going to be anything that's going to compete or conflict with that planning process. But we do recognize that we have to do something now to speak to the folks that are looking to come to Miami Beach or elsewhere, and we want to capture their attention. So this is really a method for us to put ourselves out there, but not to develop any long-term branding strategy that would then later conflict with what comes out of the CBB process. So I just want to make that clear. But the contract for the CBB does include a strategy for recognizing Miami Beach in terms of business and promoting that aspect of Miami Beach. And we will be working with the team on that.
Okay. So can I? It's okay. So, you know, going after these types of firms is really important for our community because they grow rather than replace. So, for example, and, you know, I saw this at the state where the state would run around, and we had some new gas stations come into Miami Beach or to South Florida and to Florida. But that doesn't grow the pie because, the demand for gasoline isn't dependent upon the number of gas stations, right? Same thing with coffee shops and so forth. So, but this grows our pie, which is really good. So having said that, have you guys thought about, since we're targeting this industry, have you thought about going to trade shows that are specific to financial services and putting up a booth, City of Miami Beach, and talking to people about the incentives we're offering? Have you guys thought about doing that?
Yes, we have. I know that travel has been restricted recently, and we haven't wanted to physically go to trade shows, but we are looking at opportunities for virtual trade shows and going forward in-person opportunities. We have also asked our Tourism and Culture Department to see if there's any way for the City of Miami Beach to have access to various conventions that occur at our convention center that may be related to these industries that we are trying to develop the ecosystem for. So, for example, the Emerge Americas Conference is coming up. We want to be able to have a presence there and to be able to touch all of those people that are coming in from all over, including Latin America. We want to be able to have a presence and to access those folks. So, yes, trade shows are definitely a part of the long-term strategy, but we haven't been focused on that because of COVID and the travel restrictions imposed, you know, through our budget.
So I'm going to bring an item to the commission so we talk about this because, you know, we are hopefully coming out of the pandemic and we're going to be doing some things, and this is not something we would spend a lot of money on. You know, you can, one or two of you can go to a trade show. While I think we've all learned how to do some things virtually, it doesn't totally replace being there on the floor in the middle of an event, and, you know, we're looking at our budget for the next year. So I really want to encourage us to do that. I have another question, if I could. And by the way, nice memo that you've written here. I did have a question about another program that we talked about in the city, and that was encouraging owners of vacant storefronts to allow artists and others to use that space. And what I've heard is that the program hasn't gone very well because business owners don't want to assume liability and things like that. So do you have any comments that you could give us on that program?
Sure. I will say that we have had some challenges with securing storefronts from property owners, and we saw that begin to occur maybe around January, February. In the beginning, when the pandemic was in, you know, full swing, vacancies were, you know, very normal, and folks didn't anticipate that retail was going to come back. Then what we started seeing is that folks would rather hold out to see if they could get a tenant rather than have the space occupied with an artist for 30, 60, 90 days or what have you. So while we have had some success and a lot of notoriety with the open house program, I know that the New York Times featured the program, we do know that in essence, our inability to have more and more property owners participate is really a success story on the economic development side, because we're seeing them lease up their spaces to tenants. And so it's kind of a catch-22. You know, we do want to promote activation and allowing our local artist community to have a space, but at the same time, we do want our businesses to have long-term tenants that are paying to be there.
So what could, because I'm looking at some other pop-up opportunities, that we still have a lot of empty storefronts, sadly, right? And I know that landlords would like to have a permit, but what is it that we as a city could do? Is the liability issue a serious impediment in terms of getting landlords to let the space be used for little or no rent?
Well, you know, the artists were offered a stipend of $2,500, and they could use a portion of that stipend to pay for insurance or any incidentals necessary to move into the space, you know, water, electricity, parking, what have you. So, you know, I don't know that that is the major impediment for the property owner. I do think that there is this optimistic outlook on retail and their ability to get tenants. That's what I've heard in my interactions with some of these property owners that we've been marketing to. So in essence, I'm encouraged that they're seeing activity. And then you also have some property owners that just don't want to do anything. You know, they just
want
their
property. So was the $2,500 a month, or was it total?
That was the total stipend for each artist or arts organization participating in the program. And I don't know if my colleagues in tourism and culture are on the line, but they essentially handled more of the artist's interaction aspect. And while we saw some initial success, you know, at this point, we are seeing that property owners are wanting to hold out to see if they can get a tenant.
Okay. So let's do this, because I don't want to spend any more time on it, but I'm going to bring an item so that, and maybe, Rafael, you could look at, I'm going to come in and talk to you about the liability issue, and John, I'll come and talk to you separately about maybe some additional incentives or so forth? Because, I mean, we're talking about short-term pop-ups, and we're not talking about a three-year lease. We're talking about a two-month, three-month, six-month pop-up. So I want to explore this some more, and I don't think it would cost us that much money. I think if we can find a way to get over the liability issue, we might be able to encourage some of the landlords. So I'll come and chat with you separately about
sure.
that.
So your item's going to be around the pop-ups?
Yeah, so what I want to do is go back and revisit, and I don't know if it's if that item is already here that we can talk about it, or if I have to bring an item to the commission, but I think we should try to refresh that idea, because I thought it was a really good idea, and it beats the heck out of having an empty storefront, right? So, but I'm hearing that there were serious impediments, and while I know that landlords would like to have the long-term lessee, I don't think a 2 months, 3 months, 6 month, pop-up is a major impediment if the landlord knows that the person's going to be out. It's not like they're going to lock up their property for 6 years. So I think the issues around liability and maybe those incentives we may need to explore a little bit more, and that's what I'd like to spend some time on. And if we can, John, if it's in order, that we could do that here.
It is in order. This is a standing item, and if you'd like, you could keep it in committee.
So if that's okay with you, Chair, then I'd like to, if it's in order, then for next month, I would like us to address this issue more fully on the liability and also on the incentive.
Would we title it under this heading or separate heading?
We could modify the heading to
include that. I think that the pop-up idea is its own unique idea.
So I'm looking, and we're in the sunshine, so I've been working for the past 6 months on some other pop-up ideas that I'm going to be bringing for the full commission to look at. But, we have a pop-up program now in the city that is up to 6 months, and that's already in ordinance. And it may or may not relate to this idea on the artist pop-up. I'm just hearing that we haven't had too many takers on that program, and I think we should spend some more time on it. And I'm hearing the liability issue is...
And we had, when we worked on the program initially, I think the main impediment that we can't control or address is that the expectation is that someone will be out in 30, 60, 90 days, but once you have someone on your premises and they refuse to leave, then you may have to go through an eviction process to get them out, and there's no guarantee on that front. But there are other issues, too, that maybe we can...
Law?
Pardon?
That is covered by state law or county ordinance or city?
It's state law.
State law. Yeah. Okay. And you're not talking about the evictions related to the pandemic. You're just talking about in the normal course.
Correct. Just to evict any tenant, you have to go through a process, and if you're going to get an artist in, there's always some risk. And we considered that when we developed the program. There is work that maybe we can look at and determine if the city could participate in sharing some of the risk. But that's something as a business matter that we could develop further.
Okay, let's work on it. I mean, one of the things we may want to look at is, I think it would be a limited situation where someone might not want to leave after they've made a contractual commitment, but maybe the city could offer some level of guarantee to the lessor that if that were to happen, we would help them financially during a certain period of time when we went through that process. Let's just explore it and see what's possible.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to pick up on a couple of comments that my colleagues made that I am supportive of. Completely understand the focus on the CRA. Great job. We need to do more there. But I think what I heard from Mr. Chair was around Ocean Drive. We have a challenge and an opportunity which we are addressing. I think there's some moving parts that could be helpful.
And we really need to think creatively. How do we bring in those anchor tenants? How do we incent the right type of uses in that area? So I just would like to elevate that on your priority list because that is here and now. Second, I agree with Commissioner Richardson. You know, hopping on a plane for a trade show seems like a modest, high-return investment. I'd like to see that, as I believe I heard him correctly, sooner rather than later. I also understand that there are other parties involved and that we're thinking of the city branding, but I don't want that to slow us down. The moment is now. We're capturing that, and sometimes with too many moving parts, that'll delay. This is a case where we do not want delay. So what I would really like, and I hope, Raquel, you won't frown too much if I say this, but I would really like to see this back next month with the latest status of this communication strategy. If it's not fully baked, that's fine, but we have a lot of energy here to help, and so whatever you got, you'll tell us, and we'll add, edit, delete with you. But I think we need to move while the iron's hot. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, great. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. You know, if you want to invite Melissa or whoever is in charge of this particular portfolio for her, we'll bring this item back with a focus on the communication strategy. You know, and I'd be very curious how we're targeting the, you know, financial community and then the high-tech community, both of whom, you know, have made it a point to be moving to South Florida and opening their offices here. So I think at least those two, for sure, are industries we should be targeting. And, you know, hopefully in the next month you have the semblance of a plan to go after those. And then, you know, if you need budgets for that, then, you know, we can work with you.
Let me ask one more, if I could. Raquel, back to the you know, setting up a booth and a trade show type thing. Do you have the budget to do that? Because you said basically the city wasn't traveling. So if that's the reason, do you think you need a little bit more in your budget? We're not talking about a lot of money for a couple of people to go to a trade show for 3 or 4 days and, you know, to hit the high tech and the financial industries, and everybody, you know, can identify the top 3 or 4 every year.
Right. We do have a travel budget for the upcoming fiscal year, and I think our current budget is sufficient to allow us to attend these types of events. You know, beyond the plane fare or the hotel, it's really the registration fee to be there, as well as the marketing materials, you know, any kind of step and repeat, you know, table covering, collateral, anything to distribute. Those would add to the cost. But I think that we could feasibly attend 1 or 2 trade shows next fiscal year.
Colleagues, what do you think about on this item that we ask that they come back next month? And maybe before our next meeting, you could identify 4 high-tech trade shows and 4 financial services, 8 shows. Come back with a plan on what you think, where you think you should go, and what you think it would cost. You know, we're talking about travel, we're talking about registration fee, we're talking about Miami Beach bling, if you're going to pass it out, a booth, and so forth. Is 8 shows $100,000? Is it $50,000? I'd like to see a rough order of magnitude on that. Is that possible that you could just come back with a rough, doesn't have to be finalized?
We could. I'm not sure that we would necessarily recommend 4 just because 4 exists, but we'd look strategically to see which ones make sense. Obviously, Emerge Americas is right here in our backyard, so maybe that's, you know, one of the ones that we highlight.
So here's
we have been stocking up also on our marketing materials, so we won't necessarily have to expend new funding on
okay,
those
here's why I say, just identify 4 in each category. We don't, you know, it's easier for us to cut, right, when we say, okay, these are the 4 we think we should go in each of those 2 categories. Then we can say, okay, let's take the 2 best, but it's going to be easier than just starting with 2 and then we say add 2, right?
Sure.
How do you feel about that, colleagues? Can we just ask them to come back with a plan? Is that all right? Let's do it.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
And may I offer also that the tech community and the financial services community, they're quite different. Sometimes there are synergies. But one of the ways that we have found more effective with accessing the tech community is by attending some of these local events and mixers and, you know, networking sorts of things. And, you know, that's one of the ways that we've been successful in learning more about who's here, who wants to be here, what their needs are. So, you know, some of this, yes, will include us going outside, but there's so much work to be done right here at home and in our local region.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, you have one caller.
Okay. Go ahead. Can we call him up? Who's on? Wayne Roberts. Okay, Wayne. Wayne, I hope you're going to be positive today because this is good news, but I know you liked raining on parades. But go ahead, Wayne.
Only sunny days for you, Ricky.
You're on, Wayne. Go ahead. 2 minutes.
So, you know what? You guys have the best consultants for your campaigns to run for office. You know, you got Kristen Olver, you got Johnston, you got a lot of people that are very skilled at communication. I think you should tap those people to help you in your objective because, quite frankly, you know, I don't think conventions are the way to go because booths and travel and hotels are going to cost $10,000 or $15,000, and the people that are going to walk the floors of those conventions are not going to be C-level executives or relocation managers. They're going to be, you know, the types of people that you really don't have a communication need for. What would make better sense is to target the audience that you do want, the C-level executives and the relocation managers, by email, and then load those emails into to bring up ads for what you have to say about relocation to Miami Beach, what we have to offer. We're open for business. And the first step to that is to identify what is our statement, what is our content, what is our message. That's the first step to what your objectives are. It's not really a plan that you have forward, and I would hope that, like, you bring in somebody that really understands how to attract and retain businesses that we want, whether it's retail, which wasn't in the conversation, whether it's tech firms, whether it's, you know, whatever, finance, whatever you're looking for, and target the audience that really can make the decision, the decision makers, effectively and cost-effectively. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could. Wayne, first, thank you for your comments. I know they're trying to direct us in a good direction, and we are always open for the best ideas. I would offer a couple thoughts. One, I think the appropriate use of digital marketing absolutely should be an element of our plan. So if it's not in there now, or if it needs to be dialed up, I'll count on our team to do it. Two, we are trying to bring the best thinking in this area. I happen to recently join the board of the Beacon Council, so we are tapped in, and I know Raquel and her team are personally tapped in with the county efforts and learning from them on a best practice basis what we need to do. Finally, given the progress and the enthusiasm and the importance of this topic, if our city staff believes they need additional resources to complement their in-house capabilities, then I will encourage them as part of this dialogue to bring that need forward to us, and we will look at that and see what we can do to be helpful. So, Wayne, thank you for the comments, and hopefully that helps on those specifics.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you. So you're still in the hot seat. You're making it through the gauntlet, Raquel. Great, great, great morning for you. Congrats. Colleagues, I put something on the item today. Wanted to talk specifically about this, but I put it on this item 11 to discuss possible business retention incentives for Groot Hospitality. Wanted to speak potentially specifically about this, but illustrative of the kinds of incentives we may need or want to examine as we try to attract or retain business. I put this on because I was made aware of this, and I only had a brief exchange with the founder of the company, David Krupman. He did not request this. I learned that we might be losing Groot Hospitality to Wynwood. Obviously, you all are familiar, I think, with Groot Hospitality and the you know, the fine restaurants and nightclubs that they have here in our community, and they employ a lot of people here in our community and across the county. Their headquarters are here in Miami Beach. They're, you know, currently it seems like they're outgrowing their current headquarters, and of course they're being wooed by landlords, and there's a landlord in Wynwood that would love to bring them over. As I understand it, Mr. Grutman is looking to expand his office footprint to about 7,600 square feet, so fairly large. The issue he's bumping up against is employee parking, or lack thereof, and one of the things that the landlord in Wynwood is using as an inducement is free parking. And he's got, I don't know, 50 employees in his headquarters. And so I learned about it, and I said, okay, is this something we want to try to tackle, whether it's in his case or anybody? You know, we looked at two examples this morning where we're, through other incentives, trying to attract business. But, you know, parking, availability of Class A office space, you know, other things are obstacles for people to open business here. So in the case of Groot Hospitality, you know, do we want to explore parking as an incentive? And there are some hurdles there as it relates to municipal lots. But just to make ourselves aware of the obstacles that an employer has in looking at Miami Beach as a place to open office space, this is one of the hurdles that they encounter. Raquel, do you want to tee this up a little bit more?
Sure. So this was brought to our attention as well, and I know that the Lincoln Road Business Improvement District discussed it, and I think made a motion to recommend that the city consider these incentives. Groot Hospitality is looking for 30 parking spaces in the area of 1680 Meridian, so again, not too far from where we are today. It is my understanding that the landlord in Wynwood is actually part owner of Groot, and so maybe, you know, there's some synergy there, and I think Groot would love to stay in the city of Miami Beach. They do have a large footprint here in terms of venues and employees. They're looking to hire 40 full-time employees, is what I understand, and we have been discussing this opportunity with our parking department. I know we have interim parking director Monica Beltran here, and we've really been looking at the parking demand and the parking accessibility in the area, and it is very challenging. I do know that there's a waiting list, and the high demand, you know, it doesn't necessarily allow us to, in an ad hoc fashion, provide an incentive of this kind. But I would be open to the committee's opinion and direction on how we should take a look at this or move forward with this.
The question I had when you know, I learned about some of the, you know, obstacles. If you look at the 17th Street garage, I don't remember how many spaces in there. I know it's well over 1,000. Yeah. And during the day when people are in the office, I mean, what's the occupancy of the garage? All I hear is how our garages are empty.
Right.
And then now I'm told there's an 800-person wait list. Something doesn't jive. And I understand why we have wait lists. It doesn't necessarily reconcile with supply and demand. But if we have a vacant garage, why not utilize it for during the day when there's less demand?
Right. And I bet Monica can tell us how many spaces are in that garage. And
it's 1,400 or so. And
congratulations on the new official promotion. Well deserved.
Thank you. And good morning, commissioners, honorable chair. As this came up, and certainly I want to be part of the solution, and so let's not look at the problem. Let's look at how we could solve it. One of the things I'm doing, and our lists and our permits are handled through the finance department, but what I'm doing is we're looking at these lists. Okay, some of them go back to 2015, et cetera. So we're going to clean the list. We're going to evaluate. I think something that we've not done yet is offsetting demand. You know, so do we, for example, this garage is empty at night, right? So if I can offset that demand where we can make this more accessible to some people on that list that may work the evening shift, we can do that. We want to also look at prioritizing issuance and balancing the demand, because in we have extensive waiting lists, okay? But what we find, for example, is that there are some facilities that do have parking but don't want to give it to their employees. So those employees make it to our list. Mm-hmm. But right here on Meridian, we have quite a few buildings. And on Lincoln Road, we have had incredible requests, including offering to do something for the city if they can get parking. But when you have a list, you have to be respectful of that. Now, I've worked with Integra, and I plan to work, obviously, very closely with Raquel. Applying all of these strategies and then further looking at making this part of this incentive. But the incentive, I cannot grant free parking. You know, I'm enterprise. I got to survive and be profitable. But
we also have revenue bonds, too, which prohibit us from giving away
correct,
free parking.
Correct, correct. So we can't do that. But I do commit to you that we will evaluate each request and that we will work so that if the incentive is to ensure that there is sufficient parking, that we accomplish that. And I have to tell you that more than attracting, it's retention. So that if I go out there and I say, you know what, I'm going to give you 100 parking spaces at P27, the lot right adjacent on Meridian, when they come in at 10 or 11, they're not going to find parking, right? So I'm just creating a problem for later on. So we need to be proactive and offer only that which will be available. Because it isn't sufficient to say, I'll place 25 here and 25 there and this and that and the other, and then they don't find parking. So being proactive, and I think everybody understands that parking is a quality of life and a quality of employment issue.
Yeah.
If you can't get to your job, we're going to have a problem. So I commit to working with Raquel, to working through these lists so that we don't unduly inconvenience people that have been patiently waiting, but to apply different strategies so that we can maximize usage. I also want to highlight the fact that...
Can I ask a question? Monica, let me before we move off this topic, and I apologize to interrupt you, but
no,
I just want to get educated on our technology, and that is, with respect to that garage or other garages, do we have an accurate way to get inventory? So if I said to you, Monday through Friday, how many of those 1,400 spaces are filled? Do you have a way of giving us a report? Do we have the technology to know how many spaces are utilized during the day? Like if I, you know, tell you at 9 a.m., 10 a.m., 11 a.m., you know how many spaces are vacant.
So through our parking revenue control system, it does count the ins and outs. Now, we do have other issues, and that is, for example, we monitor that because although it's first come, first served, we don't reserve spaces. We are cognizant of our commitment to access cards, so we maintain an eye on it. And so at any time that we're falling under the set parameter, we stop, we close it to transient. Now, transient is where we make our money. Right. Not from access cards.
Right.
But we recognize that access cards serve employees and therefore serve businesses. But actually, on a 20-day month, an access card pays us maybe $5 a day.
So, but your technology would also give us the number of access cards that are coming in and out, right?
Yes, and that's part of my strategy now is to analyze the usage and the time of usage to see how I can increase the percentages of access cards versus transient spaces.
So, members, what I'd like to do is have Monica give us a report on that garage next month, if that's okay. So we, and Monica, I'm happy to sit and work with you on what I envision on the type of report so we can maximize the information that's available, because I don't know that in the past we have granted access cards that are time stamped, if you will. We've never done that, right?
We've not done that.
But that's something I think we should look at, and I think you we're going there, Chairman, because if we have 9 to 5, some availability, if there is, or if it's after 5, that we might be able to sell that block and tell people, look, if you're not out of the garage by X time, then you could be ticketed or towed. But we might be able to get more capacity and more uses.
Correct. So that's part of the study that I'm doing now, is to compare. Now, I know the number of entries and I know the number of exits. I don't necessarily know the duration except for revenue analysis, and then, you know, residents pay $1 and other people pay $2. So
maybe,
you know, it's not as easy.
Well, maybe we need to talk to IT, though, because I bet, Monica, I bet we have the information. It may not be in – we may not be getting it now, but when a person goes in, they have a card, and that has a number.
Oh, no, that's for certain I can do. Now, when we do this – And absolutely, this is where I'm saying of offsetting demand, which is one of the strategies that I mentioned, we have to take into account the overlap. So 9 to 5, well, I don't ever get out of here at 5 or at 6 or at 7, sometimes it's 8. I don't want to impact businesses that say, you know what, if today you need somebody to work till 10 o'clock, your card is not going to work. You know what I'm saying? But we can do averages and estimates. It's moving. It's moving, and I think that the percentages that we have allotted right now for access cards might be a little low and can be increased. So, listen, parking is coming back.
Yeah.
Knock on wood. 2019 was a great year for parking. 2020 killed us. But it's coming back, and I would hope that some people continue this telecommuting, so that we can somehow minimize the demand for parking and the impact on the roadways. And I just think that we need to take control of it as far as analyses that have not been done, so that now we can maximize and support this incentives, because you can't have Raquel do all of this and me come back and say, but I have no parking.
So I think working on it. I like that you brought this item, and I think that You've already said that it's not just this one company, it's other companies. We have to be careful that, because there is a list, that we don't let people jump the list unless we can justify it.
But we will create a balance. Yeah. I have already worked with some, because, you know, what's happening is that if you build Class A office space, you can require that you build parking. Right. But if you don't
build... And we're going to do that in this RFP, 100%.
Right, but if you don't build, but you're converting... There is no parking. There really is no parking. But I don't want any of the companies listening to be spooked by it, because we'll find a solution.
Yeah. Okay. So let's, if we can, let's bring it back next month. In the meantime, I'll work with you on getting us a detailed report so that we can all look at it as a committee to see what sort of, because I think we should start exploring the possibility, at least, of access cards that are time limited.
Yes. The other thing is that this is like a two-department situation, because finance handles our permits. So I've spoken to finance today, to Sasha, and I've offered temporary help or whatever it is, so that we can go clean these lists and get an accurate pulse for what we have and what we need. And using also our City Hall garage, because it's really in walking distance. So we all know that it gets full when everybody's here. But I expect that some departments will continue doing some telecommuting, and as those spaces are released, we can better utilize them to support Class A office space.
And many weekends and evenings, this garage is empty.
Oh, this garage is empty evenings.
It's empty. Most people don't even know it exists, because they know the big one's there.
Correct.
But if we can find a way to inform people that... And maybe that means even a price, different pricing structure, perhaps. I don't know.
We're so cheap, we couldn't get any cheaper, really. You know, it's like $1 for parking an hour. It's like, you can't. I think you can buy a cheeseburger with that. But I don't think we could go any cheaper. I do think that there is room for a prioritizing of access cards.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not $106, maybe it's $160,
mm-hmm.
and there's a priority depending on the use. And those strategies have not been studied.
Yep.
So I think at this point, parking demand is no longer falling. I think the love affair with Shared Ride is somewhat changing, and people still are attached to their cars. So we have to roll with the punches. And
that's why I found some of the conversation that we had yesterday to be interesting, because some people think that everybody's going to be on a bicycle.
Nah.
And it's not happening. There are a lot of bicyclists, and we're encouraging more of that and rideshare, but there are a lot of cars on the road.
You know, for city residents to bike is a wonderful thing. But if I'm in the mainland, if I'm in anywhere, in Wynwood, and I want to come here, I'm not going to ride a bike. So we need, personally, I go where parking is available. Because mm-hmm. I don't want to circle. I don't want to pay $60. And to me, parking is a big... I always use this example. Why do people go to Walgreens, even if it may be a little more
parking.
Expensive? Because parking is right there, you
yeah.
know? So we've done a lot to support our restaurants during the pandemic, et cetera, and there's much more to be done. So
the other thing is people aren't going to dress up in a suit in August and get on their bike and ride 30 minutes because...
And it does rain.
Yeah.
And it does rain. We have our challenge ahead for us. We need to study again back to Ocean Drive and the 100 blocks and what do we do for the kind of demand that we get. But I truly believe parking is back, and we just need to do more with what we have.
Great.
But I can only commit to that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to address parking because I appreciate the energy and the comments from my colleague, and then maybe circle back to the incentives, which I think is more front and center. Monica, let me add my personal congratulations.
Thank
Thrilled
you.
With your appointment. Really loved your answer about, you know, wanting to be part of the solution. That's such a constructive approach that we really, really appreciate here. So thank you for that. I do support what my colleague said about a report, and I think that would be helpful. I also think, given your appointment, now would be a really nice time for us to step back a little bit strategically on parking utilization. So I think that's a good test case. What are we seeing? Are there creative uses either by day part or day? Are there some things that we should be thinking about a little differently? So I, for one, think that would be a worthy conversation. I think the report that Commissioner Richardson asked is a good starting point for that.
So if I refer back to my experience, 30-something years at the Miami International Airport, where you need to have parking, otherwise you will miss your flight. Right? And sometimes a flight doesn't leave again for 3 days, right? You need to sometimes think outside the box. And one of those boxes is forming at one time or another some type of a cooperative relationship with private lots.
Yeah.
They may have
yeah.
the inventory.
Yeah.
And they may be willing to work with us to support Class A office space need. So if they're charging $200 and we're charging $106, maybe they'll charge $150 as a cooperative spirit. So, you know, there is a world of opportunities. We just need to...
Yeah. Thank you for that. And we'll allow you time just to digest some of this and then bring it forward. I think that's the type of creative thinking that we're open for. I'm also seeing some innovative approaches, how people are repurposing certain parking spaces when they're not really needed. So that's great. Welcome. We should have that conversation. If we need to do something procedurally, I know our acting city attorney will tell us, but I think that's a great conversation to have. I want to circle back to incentives, and I appreciate my colleague bringing this forward because I think it boils up the question of we did well as a team, and these incentives we put in place are working. But the question that this specific instance tees up is there anything more that we should be doing? And for me, the starting point is to engage stakeholders, listen to what they're saying. So, Raquel, I would ask you and your team to talk to some of the folks you're working with and just get a lay of the land. Does the DDA in Miami have anything? What does the Beacon Council see? Are you getting requests? And if the answer is it's parking, let's zero in on that. But I don't want to prejudge. Maybe there's something else that people are looking for, irrespective of parking, and I'd ask you to do that informal sort of research, i.e. ask people,
and then come back and tell us. That would be where I'd like to go.
So, is it connected? Thank you. And Monica, I'm really excited about it. It's funny because we were just talking about this last night.
Yeah, wasn't that coincidental?
I'm very excited about it. And I know you're going to bring us some new ideas. You already have. Let me also say, colleagues, that I'm going to be bringing an item to the commission I've been working on for about 6 months. In fact, I invited Monica to join me to do a site tour in a pilot program in the city of Miami, where they had some underutilized parking lots and so forth. So the city of Miami's granted a one-year pilot program to allow for some new activities to generate revenue in parking areas. So, for example, there's a I wouldn't call it a food truck thing. It's a permanent setup in one of the lots, and they deliver only, so it's not where you come to the truck. But what they're doing, this is being run by Reef, which is the largest parking operator in the world now. And what they've done is they've got all these great ideas on how parking lots can be used in different ways. So, and by the way, all their employees are making $20 plus per hour, which is really good jobs. But what they're doing is they're taking the risk to create new restaurant venues that are delivery only in that case, so that let's say that there's a famous restaurant that wants to expand but they don't have the capital to do it. They're taking their menu and their concept, and they are putting together the business model and then paying the restaurant a royalty. So it's one of the things I'm looking at right now. Another thing I'm looking at right now is whether or not we should explore the possibility of having a logistics center, because, you know, every day we have hundreds of Amazon deliveries coming into the city, some of the bigger trucks, but smaller cars that are delivering 4 and 5. And so I think one of the things we should look at is whether or not we might want to take one of our facilities and incentivize someone to set up a logistics center to do the last mile deliveries, so that we can get more cars off of our streets. Yeah. So, and I've been looking at that for like 6 months, and Monica was kind enough to come with me on a site tour in Miami. So I'm going to be bringing that for a conversation to the commission, so that we can see if there's any interest in us exploring those opportunities.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, if I may. Thank you, Commissioner Richardson. Looks like we're walking in similar paths. I was on a meeting this morning with the Beacon Council with one of the founders of Reef, and I think where you're going is absolutely appropriate. And as I was talking about creative uses, that was in mind. Raquel and I were smiling because we were in email contact today about Reef specifically, because of the opportunities relates to parking, maybe business development, maybe even expansion in Miami Beach. So if you're 6 months down the road, that's great. I will look forward to hearing that. I think there's a lot of interesting opportunities, and that's the type of creative thinking that I think we now have the moment as it relates to parking. So I look forward to hearing more about that.
Yeah, if I can, Mr. Chair, I'm probably going to bring an item. We met with the chamber a few days ago, and we're going to be making a presentation to the Miami Beach Chamber of Commerce in early October, because they're very interested in looking at those models and seeing what they can do to help businesses as well. So, Monica, I'll work with you over the next month, and we'll get a report for next month and see what kind of information we can pull together so we can all consider it here in the sunshine.
You know, Commissioner, regarding Reef, so I've been thinking about it since we did that, because I thought about it from a different perspective, because our lots are good usage, except right. for a few, and we're going to have, you know, some challenges in North Beach, et cetera. But I was looking more from a resident need, so that, you know, there may be a row of condos or apartments that don't have nearby restaurants, etc. So, I mean, we wouldn't consider this, for example, near Lincoln Road or anywhere where we have plenty of eateries.
Right.
But where are the opportunities that would solicit business while also generating parking revenue?
Another thing I'm looking at on this is because we still have storefronts that are empty, and since we already have an ordinance for a pop-up up to 6 months, is that there may be some opportunity to do a 6-month pop-up for parking. A restaurant, you know, and so we're exploring that. There, for example, in North Beach, there are some empty spaces and so forth, and it just may be a way to fill those spaces. But we'll be working on liability and other things that because I can see where a landlord would be concerned if someone gets in the space and then refuses to leave. So, thanks.
Pleasure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good discussion. Just wrap up a couple things. So, with respect to Groot Hospitality, again, I exchanged like one or two texts with Mr. Grubman. I'd like to try to give him an answer whether we think we can do this or not. Do you want to just get back to us and see if what scenario we might be able to do something?
I'll make sure to get him.
And it's not, one is I want to at least give him an answer, but you're working on a longer-term strategy on how we might utilize, you know, our parking as an asset to help Raquel and her team attract businesses.
And the group can count on us providing the spaces that they need.
You think so?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
I'll make sure.
All right. Well, we'll circle back.
Without impacting others.
It'll have to come back to this committee to make that recommendation because it's financial in nature. But
it might be here in City Hall where not everybody is expected to come back and they're asking for 30 spaces. I bet there's 30 employees. I mean, we've even had employee cuts. So I bet that, you know, we can do that.
You know parking better than anybody, but 30 spaces, you can – it doesn't mean all 30 are going to be in the office at the same time. There's a sort of a
– That's the challenge with Class A office space, and that's a question that we would ask. If we're talking Class A office space, is it that it's office hours or do they have different shifts?
Why don't we – we'll get that answer
from
him.
That would be ideal. Because then we're not talking 30, we might be talking 20
Correct.
Or 15, and it's much more doable. And that's part of – and the reason why I'm saying so emphatically is, number one, we need to do it. This is not a want. This is a need, right? So we wouldn't want to stand in the way of the progress that has been made. And I'm going to be very honest. When I came here, I was like, well, we don't have parking. And then I hear enthusiastically what we're doing – and we're just going to have to do it.
Right.
So we're just going to have to find the way.
Yeah. So, Well, thank you. I love the attitude. Even like in my own office, right, if you look at the number of employees I have, it far exceeds my parking. But, you know, it doesn't account for people being on vacation, traveling, working from home, or whatever. So, you know, you know this. It's sort of yield management.
Like they say, time of day. Yeah, you don't build a church for Easter Sunday. There'll be days in which we'll have
a little overload,
but we will try to maximize the spaces.
Okay.
And we cannot put aside the idea of working with the private operators.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So I love your attitude and your ideas. You know, you've got three MBAs up here, so we all, I think, look at issues from a sort of a business perspective in terms of like solving it, right? I mean, government thinks of things differently. It's a different purpose. But with respect to parking, I've always looked at it for the city as a city asset, right? And so with respect to economic development, how do we turn that asset into something that can help us with an economic development strategy? And if you look at these assets, you know, time of day is something from a business perspective you think about, right? And I don't know that government always thinks about it. You clearly do as a business person. Like, just because you have parking spaces, how do you fill it during the day if it's vacant, you know? And it's yield management. It's no different than a hotel or an airline and how they're trying to fill seats or rooms.
So,
you know, rather than us continuing to build parking garages that sit empty 90% of the time, how do we, through technology or through targeting certain businesses or residential communities, have our assets utilized, you know, 100% of the time, but at different day parts?
So we're doing that in Collins Park.
Yeah.
The Collins Park garage had a waiting list that exceeded the number of parking spaces before we ever built it. And there are different needs, including schools in the area, blah, blah, blah. So what we did was we actually did a survey. and people that applied for cards, it's like, so what's your shift? And so we're offsetting that way. And so if I would normally say I'm going to do a 30% to access cards and 70% for transient, realizing that evening demand in Collins Park is a little different, right, and weekend as well, then I don't have to do 30%. I can do 40 and maybe even 45, because I know that there are office spaces and there are office workers in the hotels, etc. But I also know that there's a different demand in the evening. So Collins Park was addressed like that.
Yeah, all right. It's smart. So, you know, I'll tell you, one of the many, many reasons I'm excited about the 72nd Street Civic Center is that parking garage, to my mind, is one of those parking garages that during the day, as people go to the beach, it'll be utilized. And then at night, as people want to go to the Banshell or the Byron Carlisle, it'll be utilized at night. You know, and then as that retail area hopefully picks up, it'll also be used, you know, throughout the day and night. So that could be a parking garage that is used heavily, but at different times of the day, so it won't sit empty, like our 17th Street garage, which is massive, but depending on what's going on, it's either empty or extremely full.
Right. As a matter of fact, we filled it for SuperCon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, our Basel, big conventions, it gets super full.
And you think about it, we have 799 spaces at the convention center. I wouldn't say that all of them are ideal, but we do have 799. But at the preferred lot, where Pride Park sits, we had 880. And you know that those got filled as well as the area. So we still have to be very mindful of parking, and we just need to continue taking the pulse. But one thing I thank you all is that for once we're understanding that parking is back and that we cannot diminish the value of parking for everything, including the value of space.
Now, a question for you. With respect to technology, because technology can help tremendously in all of this, do you have a handle on how good our technology is? Because every garage is different and maybe has outdated technology. I have no idea. But do you need an investment from us for updating technology in the garages so that you can yield, I'll call it yield management, I don't know what you call it in your profession, but, you know, in terms of better utilizing, understanding the demand and the economics of a parking garage, do you have the technology that you need?
So about 4 years ago, we started our new, the installation of a parking revenue control system.
Is it like the best in class?
We are staying up with the technology. So when I came here, I was like, wait, we need license plate recognition.
Right.
Why do we need license plate recognition? Not only to protect revenue, but also to know who's in our garages.
Yeah.
You know, we can work with police. We can know if a car's been stolen. Yep. We can know if somebody stayed 3 days, pretended to lose a ticket, and only paid $20. Yep. So we're doing that. So you see when you go out, it says checking your license plate. We are making an investment. We need to add to what we have, but I think we're pretty much set with that. Totally for technology in my previous life. We went from nothing to everything. And when we got everything, we diminished crime, theft, and improved our revenue. So, yes, we're looking. There's certain things that I'm not a proponent of, like the per space count, et cetera, because if you have a ramp, you still have to go up the ramp to find the space, you know. So in a cost value estimate, we are working with technology to get what we need done.
Well, let us know if we can help there, because that seems to be a wise investment.
Absolutely.
If you make it. And then lastly, and then I'll turn it over to whoever wants to, and I know you want to go up. You mentioned permit is in finance, not to put anyone on the spot, but is that the smart way to have it? Is it better to be in parking? I know there's a check and balance probably
check and
reason,
balance,
but
I work very closely until now with Natalie, who sits here now.
The question I have is, you know, are we creating red tape? You know, is your purpose different from, you know, parking's purpose? Is there a good reason to have it that way?
I don't have the full history, but what I see is that we run a customer service center, so it's one place for all residents to go to
you,
for
you're
one
right,
thing.
Finance.
Yes, And then also, if there isn't call volume or transactions throughout the entire day, they can be purposed for other types of transactions like BTRs and different things
that
come in throughout the day. So we do work very closely with parking because that is one of the big components of our activity. Could it be better? I think with our new leadership, we're wide open to doing things differently and better. Absolutely.
So we set the path. Really, we do. And they deliver. So we work closely. And like I said, even earlier today, I offered help if help is needed so that we can clean up these lists and start different strategies. The strategies will be led by us, but they issue the permits.
What more do you want? You want to come back because you have a lot of good ideas, clearly. And if you need guidance from us, you know, we can keep you on the agenda and you come in. But you know, you talked about, raising rates or partnering with private lots. And you said a whole bunch of really interesting things. If and when you want guidance or, you know, authorization from us, just reach out to any of us, and I'm sure we'll support you.
So this year has been a very reactive year. So we've tried to get ahead of the game aesthetically. We were declining. Financially, we were in a bad place. We are working with PD and code for all the other issues we have in the city. Some people don't know all the stuff that parking does. We paint streets. We make signs. We do enforcement. We do a lot of things. And so we've been quite reactive, but I'm looking forward to a more proactive approach so that we can now go and change whatever strategies we need to change. It's a new day.
Okay.
I just wanted to add, you know, for anyone listening, you know, our willingness to assist Groot is really in line with our overall strategy. I know we have identified financial services and tech firms as targeted industries, but our job creation incentive program is for industries that are bringing headquarters or expanding their headquarters. And it sounds like that's what Groot wants to do here by adding employees and expanding their footprint. So any assistance to them in terms of parking is really in line with our overall economic development strategy.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to mention that because I saw in the memo, like, you know, does this fit in our strategy? I think the reason we said finance and high tech is because that's hot right now and it's coming. It's something we've never had as a community. That's not to exclude other good businesses. And when you have something, you know, that's extremely unique like Groot Hospitality, that's homegrown and home-based. And by the way, they're, you know, half-owned by Live Nation, which does a whole lot of things. We still, as a community, we're still big into hospitality and arts and culture, which completely fit into what this company does, and they're looking to expand. And I personally am competitive. I don't want to lose business to Wynwood. So, I mean, if we can solve this problem for them, this is a huge win for us.
Yeah, and I want to be supportive of anything that grows the pie here. But as I've said before, I don't think the city should be in the business of incentivizing a business that will put another business out of business, right? So you don't give an incentive to a coffee shop or a sandwich shop if it's going to put another sandwich shop out of business, because that interferes with free enterprise. But with these types of businesses we're talking about, they grow the pie. And that's what we want to do, is grow the pie, and especially in the area where the higher paying jobs are. So,
thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the spirited discussion. I think in the next 1 or 2 months, we should pick up on the strategic discussion of parking utilization. I agree with you, Mr. Chair, that maybe there's some value-added technologies. I think the idea of piloting with private lots, and I'm not saying that that's all going to be fully baked, but I think maybe conceptually we could give you some direction. So, Mr. City Attorney, do we need to act to try and put it back on our agenda, or do we need to take any action to have that conversation? What would you recommend procedurally?
Well, the item right now is discussing the possible business retention incentives for Groot, but the discussion really has been, you know, general. You could keep it in committee with this item. We could just amend the title to
add parking.
Yeah, if you look at item number 2, which is, you know, a retention attraction strategy, we can have a parking update as part of that.
Perfect.
Until
That sounds good. I just wanted to make sure, because I think there are a lot of great ideas put forward. As to Groot specifically and the fact that they are looking to expand, that's exciting. We want business excitement. We want energy. And it sounds like we may have the spaces available. So the thing that I would like to understand more, and I don't know if that's a discussion we want to have today. We've got a few other things we're going to get to. Or if you all want to come back to us, is I just always want to make sure that we are being consistent. So, you know, is there going to be a new policy that we're making that this could fit under? Is this something that's in place? I'm not sure if that's something you're ready to discuss now, Raquel, but I'm looking for something that we're going to say, hey, if this fits here, that's great. But if the next person comes in, can they have the 30 spots? Could you...
That's something that we did consider as we put together this memorandum. It is very challenging to get a request like this and to address it immediately without looking at the bigger picture.
I agree.
So we would want to implement some sort of policy, at your direction and the City Commission's approval to ensure that going forward we're able to provide these incentives in an equitable way and in a transparent way.
Okay.
So I'm going to ask that too.
Yeah.
That we're talking about Groot, and we're talking about the fact that we also worked with Integra because these are people that came into an existing building and could not build their parking. So that's why we're doing this. I also want to make an excuse. I don't like excuses, but I'm probably 50% down in my administrative staff. I've lost huge talent. And therefore, as hard as we work, we're trying to fill positions and catch up, because we were like 17 and we're down to about 9.
Wow.
But we're doing well. We're surviving. And I was just talking to John about, you know, having to fill positions and enforcement officers, everything else, so that we can deliver a good product. So working on it. It's not something that I'm doing for the first time. It's something that we've already started, but I can't promise you that in a month's time we're going to have all these strategies in place.
Of course, not. Absolutely.
Yeah. I just want to
exactly
real expectations.
Just to advance the ball here, if I may, and I'll straw man and look to my colleague over there. But it seems, in addition to the things we've said, what we want the administration to do is to reflect on the opportunity for potential other incentives, with a specific focus on parking, and use this request as a model, base case as to what that might look like, and then come back next month with your recommendation. That would be my motion.
So I think what I just heard, I like it, except for I think what I heard is she may need a little bit more than a month with a lot of strategy, or is that...
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Commissioner Richard. So I think there's two elements. Right. First, I agree the strategy needs, more time. I was looking for an initial discussion on the strategy. If that's going to take a couple months, even that. I was looking for it early so we can engage. But my motion was more precise, related to the parking incentives. And I think I'm seeing a nodding head, so I'm going to approve. I think that in 30 days that Raquel could come back with a recommendation as it relates to incentives, specifically parking, that relates to the item that Mr. Chair put forward. So two separate branches. Does that clarify?
That's fine. And also, we're going to work on next month getting a report back on at least for one garage so we can see...
That's in the works.
...that what the format is and what kind of data is available, right?
That's in the works. I've already asked staff to create an analysis of the usage of access cards. Okay. At 17th Street Garage.
Yeah, I'm fine for that. So I'll second that motion. Yeah.
Good. Okay. Thank you, colleagues. It's a spirited, but I think important discussion. The reason I put it on, to a lesser extent, was one to try to capture what I think is a quality business before they make a determination to go to Wynwood. But more importantly, we'd have this strategic discussion because we've asked a lot of Raquel and her team to create economic development strategies, and I wanted to use, and I hadn't thought of it before until this came up, our parking assets, can we use that as a weapon to help attract businesses? So the answer is clearly yes, and you're going to work on, what the strategy is. We will need to come up, though, with a policy to help guide you, like what, you know, what kinds of businesses, what, where do we want to prioritize parking, where we have a lot of occupancy. So, like, North Beach probably would be a great place if we could attract businesses to go up there. You know, underutilized parking garages, premium you know, parking rates, you know, preference, all these kinds of things. We need to develop that so that you have the ability to go when you're talking to a business, say, well, we can guarantee 10 spots if you meet these criteria.
Absolutely. And we do get questions like that all the time. Where's the available parking? Where are the restaurants within, you know, 10 minutes walking distance? Where are the daycares? Where are the gyms? So,
by the way, everything
questions
you just mentioned, there are certain, you mentioned daycare, there are certain things that you need to have as part of an ecosystem to bring business. And if we're underrepresented in those categories, let us know so that we can create potential incentives or through zoning allow certain business uses to come in.
Thank you.
Because daycare is one that I know that I bump into against for my employees. Like, they don't have a daycare nearby. And so you're starting to see them pop up in office parks now. They used to be zoned out. You weren't allowed to have daycares anywhere near where offices were, which make no sense, right? So.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
For your parking awareness.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Great job. Congrats.
Thank you.
Mr. Mike Smith, we've had you waiting. I don't know. There you are. Items 4 and 5. Good afternoon now.
Good afternoon.
So item 4 is to discuss vested employees in Tier B that have been rehired in Tier C. You want to tee this up, explain what we're talking about?
There were 6 individuals that were listed in this this study that was done by the actuary. And just to start off, this is under the HR banner, but I'm not here as an advocate for this item this morning. It's under our banner because it's an employee benefit, but because HR generally is, yes it is. HR is generally in the business of recruiting and retaining employees, and in those rare instances where we encourage employees to leave, coming back is usually not an option. So, with that said, in this study there were 6 individuals that were previously participating in Tier B of the General Employees Pension Plan, and then there was a new tier came in 2010. So these folks were in Tier B, left, came back under Tier C. So right now, I guess the pension administrators are having a difficult time managing these bifurcated pension plans with these employees. There is one employee who is not really part of that. I had some discussions with the pension office, and he was actually returned to his position through an arbitration hearing. So he really is still in Tier B, except for some suspension time. So the others that are left are 5, including one of the sitting city commissioners. He, I believe, at the last meeting of FERC, withdrew his participation in this. That's my recollection.
Mr. Chair, I'll offer my comments.
And,
so,
and if I may, sorry, I believe that the commissioner withdrew his participation if no one was going to sponsor it on account of him being in the pool. So I'm not sure that it's an absolute withdrawal. It was more conditional.
That was my recollection as well. So let me add my comments on this. I am not supportive of this because I realize there may be a little bit more administrative effort that's required. The reason is you just said it, Mike. You're in the business of retention.
Retaining.
So I think that if somebody leaves our employ voluntarily and then they decide they want to come back, there are consequences. And we changed our plan, and I don't think that those employees, and it's not personal, I don't know any of these employees that are affected, but there are consequences. And I don't want to be have us perceived as incentivizing someone to leave, because if they then decide to come back, they'll retain a prior benefit. So I don't think that's appropriate. The big thing here on this B2C is the, it seems to me, is the date when someone can retire. Because under B, I think you can retire at 55.
Under B, you can retire at 55.
And under C, it's 62. So that's, I mean, that's a big deal.
Well, there's significant changes, differences between B and C. The,
right.
The multiplier is, instead of 3%, is 2.5%.
Right. So here's
the age, the average number of months.
While I don't agree with this, there is a related issue that I would support, and I'll put it out there, and that is, let's say an employee qualifies under B, and they're vested, and then they come back, and they start earning credits under C. They've already vested under B, and I think that we should find a way to, and I don't know what the answer is, I think we should task Human Resources to look at this, if they would have to qualify with an additional set of years. So they've already qualified with, how many years under B do you have to
5 years, it was okay. Changed in 2000.
So under B, you'd have to be 5 years, and then you're vested. You leave the employee of the city, then you come back and you're under C. It's my understanding you'd have to start with a new 5 years, right?
Correct.
That's something I think we should look at, because they have qualified with 5 years. I think that there may be a way for those few individuals that we can say, okay, either you're already vested for the additional time, or we're, you only have to have half the time. That's something I think that we should look at, because I don't think that's right that if somebody comes back, they would have to start all over with their vesting time. But I don't like this idea that someone can leave and come back and be able to retire 7 years earlier, because I think there's a consequence.
There's a consequence.
Because we're in the business of retention.
And you know, the pension plans are very precise about how that's handled. And I know that every employee who leaves the city talks to the folks in the pension office. In fact, Rick Rivera is on the call if he wants to make any comments or you have any questions of him. But they're advised on what the consequences of their actions are. So.
Yeah. And this is not something that the administration is recommending, right?
I'm not.
Yeah. Thank you.
No, I'm supportive of that direction. And I think the nuance that Commissioner Richardson brought forward is worth looking at. I do also think, while it's not a huge number given the scope of our pension, it was an impact to our pension unfunded liability. And whenever I talk about pensions, what I'm really talking about is making sure that we can deliver for our commitments long-term for our employees, full stop. That's the priority. And I know our pension team works hard at that. So, you know, in this case, you know, given the argument that Commissioner Richardson made, given the fact that this would add to the unfunded liability, to me, I'm supportive of the direction of looking at the issue a little more narrowly as you defined it. So if that was in the form of a motion, I will second it.
It was. I didn't know where the chair is going to be on this issue, but I will make that motion that we task you to go and work on that, because I don't know what the answer would be, what the recommendation, but I do think there is an equity argument to be made there. So my motion would be you know, while I don't support this, I would ask you to go back and work on that other issue and bring it back to us with your recommendation. And maybe you're going to come back and say you don't like my idea, but maybe you'll come back and give us an idea on how it could work. That's my motion.
Mark, are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Is that
good.
Right?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, I agreed on this one. I wanted to defer to Mike, who, you know, lives and breathes this. So if this is how you feel, then I support it. The next item is something I brought up, which is the question about implementing a 10-year vesting period versus the current five. And I know, Mike, you disagree. You think you need five as a retention, as a
yes, I strongly disagree
to attract
back to a 10.
Yeah.
As I mentioned earlier, in 2010, there were a number of changes made to the pension plan. The multiplier went down from 3 to 2.5. The average number of months of service went down from 3 years to 5 years, which is a longer period, which lowers it a little bit. The age went up substantially from 55 to 62. And after you get a pension, the COLA went down from 2.5% annually to 1.5% annually. So there were a lot of things that changed in that 2010 pension reform. The good thing that happened was the vesting went from 10 to 5. So that was the only really positive outcome. And I feel as an HR person, again, talking about recruitment and retention, we want people to come to our city, And the five-year vesting is very attractive for senior managers, people who have a lot of experience. It's also very attractive to younger people because the millennials don't work 10 years anymore.
They don't work,
period. They like to move around.
They don't work, period. So I'll tell you, Mike, you said something like as a recruiter, you know, you wear different hats, right? So the way I view my job, and I think my colleagues, is we protect taxpayer money. It's one of the most important things that we do. I'm also a private employer. I own my business. I'm the CEO. If I listened to, like, my employees and what they wanted, you know, I'd be out of business today, right? So, I'd like to work 1 hour a day and double my salary and have all these perks, right?
One-year vesting.
And these are the tensions, right, that one has when running a business. And, you know, government's government. It's not a business, but there are business-like decisions we need to make. And what I worry about when I look at, you know, a five-year, you know, vesting that then all of a sudden you have this pension for life, and then, oh, by the way, if you die, and then your spouse gets it. I mean, long tails. And then future generation of taxpayers are going to be really pissed at us today because we've made these decisions that we make because in the short term we're trying to attract employees, but long term you have these unsustainable pension plans. That's why I wanted to talk about this, is that, you know, I'm when I see a five-year pension, as a private employer, no one's got this benefit. Only government has benefits like this. You're a young person, you come here, work 5 years, and you've got this, you know, pension for life. I'm not thrilled with it. Even though everything Mike said is 100% true, we made this a less rich pension, doesn't mean we have to continue making it as generous as possible. I think Miami Beach is an incredibly attractive place to work. At one time, you know, many decades ago, you know, working for government meant you made less than you would in the private sector, but you had this nice pension and these other perks. That's no longer the case. Government now is very competitive with salaries, and you have all kinds of other perks that you don't enjoy in the private sector, including a pension. So, you know, for me, I'm sort of the mindset 5 years is already extremely generous, and I don't want to burden future taxpayers with long-tail pension costs. And so I want to talk to you guys about, do we want to look at a 10-year vesting period?
If I could like a comment, please.
Yeah.
Can I win, Mr.
Yeah,
thank you. I absolutely share the goal of being sensitive to the long-term pension tail, particularly as it relates to our ability to deliver what we're promising our employees. So 100%, that's a great topic, that's a great issue. And in fact, I think what we might want to do, if it's the will of this body, is have an executive briefing as we approach our negotiations so that we're all sort of baselined on the issue of pensions. We have negotiations coming up with several unions.
All five unions, all five.
Yeah, all five of them. So I think this is a great topic. I think we should do that. And so my hesitation today is on this particular lever for a couple reasons. One, I want to do what has the biggest bang. Until we have the briefing and see the menu of alternatives, I don't know that this is the one. And two, I worry a little bit because we have been bringing in some very senior level talent, and that talent, you know, I'm wondering, and I sense from the administration that 5 years may have been an important element of the recruitment package. So I see value from that standpoint. So
if it is the will of this body, what I would be supportive of, because I think you're going in the right direction, Commissioner Arriola, and I think there are things to be discussed. I'd rather first get the big picture, the executive briefing, maybe ask the administration to bring us a menu, and that we could engage at that point going forward. That would be my point of view.
And I feel the same way. This is a discussion item. I wasn't looking for action today because this is a big strategic decision we make, and I think we need to fully understand the economics, how it impacts retention. And, you know, right now we're in a very difficult labor market as an employer, but this too will pass. The problem that doesn't pass is these long-tail pension obligations. So I don't want to make decisions on a short-term problem that have long-term implications for purposes of, like, recruiting.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. So I'm in agreement. If Commissioner Samuel, that was a motion. We need to do a little bit more work on this. So here's my concern. We're in a very unique situation in that our pension is not portable. You know, if you go back 50 years ago, somebody would go and work for a company and stay 30 years, and then people don't really have that work life cycle anymore. There tends to be more movement, and we have benefited as a city, especially with some of our recent senior management hires, because they were out of the Florida retirement system. And by the way, the FRS used to be a 6-year grandfathering and has now moved to an 8-year grandfathering. And when you look at that opportunity, so you can move from one opportunity to another within the FRS, and there is some portability opportunities. So, for example, you might be able to teach school, and then you might be able to go to work for the county, and then you might be able to go work for another entity that's participating in FRS, and you're changing jobs, but you're keeping your status and your vesting. We don't offer that because we have a very specific defined benefit program here that qualified under federal law many, many, many years ago. We don't pay Social Security, which is also a detriment, right?
That's part of the...
Because people don't get their quarters. So I think it may be a problem in us attracting talent if we were to increase it to 10, but I would like you to come back and, you know, what would happen if it were 6? FRS went to 8. But again, FRS has a lot more opportunity because you have a lot more portability. We offer no portability here.
That's correct. It's a local plan. But more importantly, I think in your backup, you've got an actuarial study which mirrors exactly the same thing that we did in 2018 when we started collective bargaining last cycle. We did this, we thought it would move the needle. It doesn't move the needle.
So with respect to the unions, because you mentioned we're going to be in negotiations with all the unions, right? What vesting period did they have? Is it all over the board or is it all 5 years?
Police and fire negotiated 10 for themselves last time.
Okay.
But again, the same thing applied. The actuarial study didn't really produce a savings. Vesting alone does not produce a savings in any plan. Either plan of the cities.
And that study was from 18, so it's recent?
2018. And then this one was redone recently. It's almost identical.
Let me ask a different question.
I can't believe that, Mike.
Sir, it's in your backup.
I know. I still don't believe it, right?
It's 0.02%.
People give you all kinds of numbers, and you just know it's BS, right? I mean, this is a BS number. I mean, and I'm not an actuary, but you just know that if you hire 100 employees today at $100,000 a year and they vest at 5 versus 10, that's going to have an impact. The numbers are going to be different.
I'm not an actuary either, but I know that Gabriel Roeder Smith is an excellent firm.
You can pay somebody to give you the number you want. I mean, that just doesn't fly with me. There's no way that it's literally the exact. There's no difference. That's BS. Yeah. It just is.
And I would like to also point out that if somebody takes a 5-year pension, it's a much substantially lower pension per month than it is for a tenured person, because there's not the COLAs and there's not the growth in salary and merit increases. So it's far less than if it would be after 10 years.
So Mike, one of the things that I would like is, I think it's the will of this, but we want you to come back and give us more information. One of the things I would like you to do is brief us on what happened when we moved from B to C. You when you made your opening comments, you said that we changed a lot of things that were not as beneficial to the employee, but we changed this, which was beneficial. So I bet someone at the time did some sort of study to see what the value of the pension. I would like you to brief the committee on that, because I'd like to see what the value is.
Just from experience, the change in the multiplier is the largest factor. And then the change in the
but all those things put together has a value, right? All those things, if you take an average person,
they all do.
Let's do that. Is that okay with you guys?
Yeah, and Commissioner Richards, just for clarity, that specific question you asked, you want brought back to the sport body, but in addition, you were supportive, if I heard you right, of an executive session for the full body.
Exactly.
Got it, and it was approved.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you very much.
All right, only a few more items. Hopefully we can go quickly. Commissioner Samuelin, you have an item, a discussion regarding identifying funding resources for the upcoming seawall needs. Good topic.
I'll tee it up, and then Nelson's here to help. The headline is, as I see it, that we're taking a broad view of resiliency, so clearly keeping our streets dry is an important element of it. We've got some innovative programs now for private property, and then we get into the topic of seawalls. 90% plus of seawalls are private. That's its own bucket. We're here talking about public seawalls because we need to lead by example and we need to get our infrastructure going. This item has been traveling through land use, so I think we've made some real progress. And the headlines, as I understand it, and Nelson, you can add, edit, delete, is that we have approximately $20 million, both from the GEO bond and the resiliency fund. The administration has done a very good job with a thorough analysis of where to spend the money, and they've come forward with a prioritization. And so I think the punchline is they're looking for our feedback on the prioritization. This would then travel to the full commission. And I think one of the items that came out of land use is the importance of communicating to the community and public. Because, frankly, some of our seawall efforts have not necessarily been as visible or, frankly, haven't taken place. So the community is saying, hey, when are you going to get your seawalls going? So with that said, I think we've got a plan. I think we've got funding. This is not an incremental funding request. This is really a blessing of the plan to move forward. Let me stop talking. Nelson, add, edit, delete.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Commissioners, Nelson Perez-Agome, City Engineer, for the record. I'll tackle the last question first. There will be incremental funding required at some point in the future, right? There's a funding gap. Currently, we have $21 million. Fiscal year 22 should approve another $5 million in general fund. And we expect another $5 million from GEO bond. But there is beyond that, that'll take us to $31 million. Beyond that, there is still a funding gap between the total projected budget of $48.5 million and the $31 million we have.
And just on that, so Nelson, to clarify my comment, today you're not requesting that, but you are saying to fully fund the program down the road, there'll be a need.
That is correct.
We're on the same page.
Yeah. So we did meet internally. We are preparing the communications to go out as soon as we approve it at commission. And the reason we're here today is just to report, frankly, that we have the funding we need to get the program moving forward. The prioritization is what we recommended at land use, which would be presented again at commission. We would want the flexibility to skip items as necessary. For example, the first two seawalls on the list are along Dade Boulevard. And we would want to reach out to the county, start coordinating with them, and see if they were going to partially fund those seawalls. So we might just skip straight to seawall number 3 if we wanted to implement the plan right after commission approval. But other than that, this is basically just reporting that financially we can move forward with the program, and in some later years, maybe fiscal year 24, 26, we'll need to start looking at additional funds.
What's the time horizon for this program? Are we talking 10 years, 20 years?
It's a 10-year program. Technically, the way you see it on your paper, it's a little bit more because it started, I'm counting FY 21, and it'll end in FY 32. But it's a 10-year program counting expenditures from 22 forward because we've already encumbered the
21. So it's a 10-year program, and you've got approximately 75% of the funding in place.
To date, we have approximately slightly less than 50, but we will have 75% coming next year, or up to about 75% once we get next year's monies.
You have about 30 out of 40?
Well, we have 21 right now, but fiscal year 22 is going to bring additional funds. And then the extra $5 million from the GEO bond tranche that's already committed will bring the additional funds as well.
To get it to 30?
To take it to 30.
So then we'll be 75% funded for a 10-year program, which is not bad. I like that.
And just to add that we do anticipate leveraging a lot of grant dollars. We just don't know how much. So this might be almost fully funded. It's just we can't commit to that. That's all.
Has the state, have we explored whether or not there's any funding opportunity at the state?
We explored fine grants, and not only the state, but depending on, as I stated, with the seawall and what the right-of-way is next to the seawall. If it's a Miami-Dade County right-of-way, then we're trying to explore partially funding that with the county, but we can't commit to that yet either.
Yeah. If we have not, if we as a body haven't put this on the list of our legislative priorities for our folks helping us in Tallahassee, we should do that, I think, you know, because if there's state funding available, or if, I mean, these are the types of things that could be funded through the state water programs.
Definitely.
And we should explore that. So I don't know, let me make a motion then to that we, would we send this back to the commission to get this as added as a legislative?
If you want to get it out of committee to add it to our legislative priorities for the next fiscal year.
Yeah, so I'd like to make a motion that we take it to the commission and have the full commission consider adding the encouragement, if you will, at the state level for additional funding opportunities to help communities that need seawall funding.
For my own clarity, would that be part of the referral from land use, or would that be a separate?
I think that's a separate item.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I may,
go ahead.
Commissioner Richardson's finished. Yeah, no, I'm supportive of the direction. I think making sure it's high on our legislative priorities is a good thought. Real-time democracy here. I did get a question, and you can refresh my memory, Nelson, because you did present Parkview Island. They have some seawalls that I know they've been concerned. I don't mean to catch you cold, but I know that that's an area where there have been questions. Could you just sort of comment on how that fits in the priorities and what our plans might be related to Parkview Island?
I believe it is around the middle of the priorities. I don't see Parkview Island seawalls. I think those are all private, but the ones across the waterway from Parkview Island, I think they're number 35, 37, and a few I see around 15 and 28.
Okay, so a good amount of seawalls, the ones that we believe we're responsible for are in the plan?
They are in the plan, absolutely.
Okay. All right. With that, I'm going to second the motion, and I think we can move this out of committee. I believe we've got a new 10-year program here for public seawalls, so I think this is an exciting move forward. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I think you have a caller, admittedly maybe from a prior item that we may have missed.
Wasn't keeping track. Who is it?
Mr. Wayne Roberts.
Okay.
Yeah, Ricky.
Wayne, so, buddy, you need a hobby. Why are you watching these meetings on a Friday? It's beautiful out. What are you doing with your time?
What are you doing with your time, Rick?
I mean, I'm here.
There you go. You care about the city. So,
all right, go for it.
So, a couple of issues. One, you know, the B2C change on the pension, there would be one caveat that I'd like you to consider, and that is if somebody leaves for Family Leave Act or for medical purposes and they come back because they're healthy or their child grew up to the kindergarten and they feel comfortable going back to work, that they're allowed to to take their old policy with them when they come back. The second issue, I'm just starting to understand the pension. Like, so somebody's fully vested after 5 years rather than partially vested. And that, I think, is your problem. A, for retention, because if somebody's fully vested after five, why are they going to stay for 20? And why would somebody 20 years, although their income goes up a little, why would they get the same pension as somebody that's been here 5 years? That's your issue. It should be partial allocations until you get to like 20 years rather than a full vested position. And I would also consider the state policy. So instead of a local pension plan or a local union relationship, why are we one of the few municipalities that haven't even reviewed the state policies for state for police, fire, and city workers? What would that have? What would that do to our budgets? And it's not really a tail, because I think we have to, you know, have a percentage of the funding each year for the pension. So we need to fund it accordingly, even though it's, you know, back-ended payments. But we need to fund it as it happens. So that's my thoughts. I don't think 5 or 10 years is the issue. It's especially without Social Security. I think the issue is what percentage are they vested in?
That's 2 minutes. Income? Thank you, Mr. Roberts.
Thanks.
I did not have
there's also a 27, sorry. Which is...
Yeah, no, I got 27. That'll be a little bit longer, I think. But let's try to do 9 and 10 quickly. Who's going to... Hi.
Good afternoon, Mr...
Good morning. Good afternoon, sorry.
Yes. Okay, so the item that you have before you is in reference to Mr. R. Sports. He's a tenant at Anchor Garage. Mr. R. Sports has been a tenant for a while. He is in his last year of the of his lease, and he desires to stay within as a tenant. However, he has been in distress for the past couple of years, and what we are proposing is as follows. One is to enter into a conditional termination agreement. The agreement, as it stands right now, does not have a termination clause, and this will allow us to market the space to a prospective tenant and then provide the city the ability to move out within 60 days' notice, and secondly, amend his rent obligations to a percentage gross.
Chair, is this the recommendation of the administration?
Yes, it is.
I'll move the item based on the recommendation of the administration.
Let me ask, do we have percentage gross deals with anybody else?
We do. I would have to verify. Okay. Yes, we do.
No, I mean, I'm not opposed to
them. We do it, for instance, Colony Theater.
Huh?
We do it with Colony Theater.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's different, yeah.
We do with a lot of our leases do have percentage gross, but typically with a minimum guarantee.
Right.
With a base rent.
Yeah.
And then.
No, I mean, I like those deals, especially in certain circumstances. So you're saying a lot of them do?
Yes, sir.
So just so I understand, so walk us through again. So terminate. Market the space?
Well, we can market the space while they are still there, and it allows the city to still collect some revenue. Mm-hmm. And then when we find a prospective tenant that is vetted and secured, they can move out. We don't lose any revenue, and then we can get somebody who can pay market rents.
Okay. Oh, so we would lose them as a tenant, Mr. R.
Yep.
Okay. For some reason, I thought you were saying something else in the beginning. Okay. You moved it?
Yeah. I basically, you know, as a general policy, I'm just going to follow the recommendation. I looked at this. I don't see any reason not to to oppose it. So, yeah.
Okay, perfect.
Okay. Yeah. Mark's with it. Okay, good. So that takes care of item 9. Are you going to do number 10 as well?
So number 10 is in reference to Cubiche 105. They are
that's Cubiche 105?
Cubiche.
They call it that's so, right.
Because they're a venture. They're,
yeah, got it.
So, they were actually...
Same folks, Ceviche and Cubiche?
They're two principals.
But different food concept.
Correct. And they provide, you know, very fine dining. When they executed their lease agreement in 2017, they were actually doing $3 million worth of renovations, and they were paying their rent obligations during that time.
Amazing, yeah.
They weren't able to open until February 2020.
Yeah, right.
For 2 weeks.
Yeah, I remember.
And that's it. And then they didn't reopen really until March of this year.
Yeah.
So what we're requesting, given what their cost of occupancy ratio is to, one, abate January and February of this year, And
2021?
Of 2021, because it didn't really open until March of 2021. And then for the remaining months of March 2021 until March 2022, to do a partial abatement where we do 10% gross receipts. On year six, which will be April 2022, they will resume, as the schedule is indicated, at 6.56 square foot, which means that their revenues are going to be a lot more. I mean, our revenues are going to be a lot more.
Yeah.
Okay? And we do have a 3% escalator in this lease agreement.
Yeah. So months ago, they contacted me, and I said, look, talk to the administration.
Mm-hmm.
Work it out. But I did talk to – I remember talking to Adrian Morales about it. I think that they had a very credible argument on the build-out time. Because they were somewhat delayed and they were paying the full rent. So I'm glad that you all – I assume you're recommending this.
Yes.
You're bringing – so I'm glad that you all were able to work it out. I thought that was the best way for them to handle it rather than to just try to negotiate with the elected. So based on that, I'm going to accept the recommendation of the administration. I'll move the item.
Second.
Thank you.
Okay, good. Great job.
Thank you.
Okay. Item number 27. Mark, this is your item.
Yep.
Who's going to tee this up?
Can I tee it up real quick and then look for the administration? So, colleagues, this is sort of a follow-up to the conversation we had about the Byron Carlisle at Commission. And just to be clear, this is also on Thursday's agenda. So I welcome the comments and discussion, but we're going to also have a conversation. I think we had a very constructive dialogue around the Byron, and the general lay of the land is right now the Byron is not included in the budget, so we don't have funding for the Byron. What I've been doing is working closely with the city administration to say if it is the will of this body to advance the Byron in some way, to advance the design process, so really to initiate it, what would we do? And that's really the essence of this recommendation. Now, I listened carefully to all my colleagues, and especially my colleagues who are with us today, and if I heard two things, one thing I heard was a question about vision. I think there was a question, what might this look like? And on Thursday, I'm going to include, and actually the agenda is live, a vision that some in the community put forward. I'm not saying that's the right vision, but it is a starting point. The second thing I heard from this subset of the full body was, you know, the 500,000 sounded like a lot. And, in fact, I think I recall the number 100,000 was floated. So I wish I could tell you I got all the way to bright. Well, we didn't, but we did sharpen our pencils. We did take that feedback seriously. I pushed really hard. And right now, what the administration is prepared to support, if it is the will of the commission to move forward, is a 400,000, not to exceed 400. So you showed some fiscal discipline. We scrubbed the numbers, and that's what we got. So let me turn it to the administration to give a little more add, edit, delete to what I just described.
Good afternoon again. Okay, so what we were looking for the Byron Carlisle, I understand we're going to be doing charrettes, and we already have a community survey. And with that input, along with the conceptual design, will drive what the future plans of the Byron Carlisle are. In alignment with that, what we estimated was about 500 square feet for a building that's about 28,000 square feet. I'm sorry, $500 a square foot. Okay. And the design component would be about 12 to 15% exclusive of construction administration cost. So we came up with this figure about 400,000 or up to 400,000 to develop this conceptual design, which will also provide, those funds will provide, you know, not only the conceptual design component, but also the ability to do the charrettes and all the input that we require.
And good afternoon, if I may, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, just to add to what Elizabeth had to say. This is a 28,000 square foot facility, and you've seen in some of the other studies that have been done that the range of construction, depending on what is done, is somewhere north of $15 million. You know, I would expect to pay for a full design development on this somewhere north of $2 million to take it to full contract documents. This is this effort, as I envision, and I have spoken to our folks at facilities, would take it somewhere short of 30% development. It's going to involve significant due diligence, code checks, you know, zoning, as well as recreation of basically as-built. They would have to start off with what is there today. There's really no working drawings per se, so they would have to recreate that. Then there would be an extensive community outreach component and public outreach to receive feedback. I envision multiple alternatives or concepts that will have to be prepared and worked through, and option 1 through 7 and modifications of 1, et cetera. I envision producing animated renderings as well as 3D renderings to the community so we see what we do. And then the largest component that would come back from the outreach is programming. What is it that we're actually putting inside this building, and what does it look like, as well as what it looks like on the exterior? So it's a very involved component. So if you think about it, commissioners, if a full design, and where I would look at it at about $2 million, a quarter of that is in theory is not an enormous number from my perspective.
Let me just say something. So fine work, and like how you arrived at this number makes 100% sense. I just want to make a comment and observation before we get into the meat of it. So, David, you've been on this project forever, and I certainly have. You know, I remember not that long ago, you know, when we had to first close the Byron Carlisle, people said, well, that was BS, you know, you shouldn't have done that. And then we said, well, it's not up to code, it's an unsafe structure. They called that BS. And then we said, well, to renovate the project would be $3 million. I think that was the number we had used. And they're like, oh, that's crazy money. And, you know, now we're, you know, talking to do this project is $15 to $20 million. So people who talk about the 72nd Street project, oh, my God, it's doubled. This project has now gone up, you know, 7 or 8 times our worst-case scenario, just like 2 years ago when we were saying it would take $3 million. You know, so, like, I just want to, like, the hypocrisy of some folks who were, like, saying that, you know, we should never have closed it. It was not an unsafe structure. And now they're like, oh, yeah, just, you know, completely redo it to the tune of $15 to $20 million. The same people that 2 years ago were saying you didn't even have to close it, now they're asking for a $20 million renovation. It's shocking. And in February of this year, we had a ready, willing, and able partner that was going to do this for us for free. You know, we turned that down, and now we're going to ask taxpayers to be on the hook for upwards of $20 million. I mean, it's government at its finest, just the ludicrousy and hypocrisy of what we do. It's really, really disturbing that we are now having to do what's before us.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, well said on the historical perspective. Government inaction. This building has been condemned. It's not fit for human habitation. I'm told you have to put a hazmat suit on to walk in the building. Doing something at the Byron Carlisle site is a priority for me. But the 72nd Street project is a higher priority for me. And I want to keep in mind that I can't use any future CRA money for the 72nd Street because we've checked that, and legally you can't because we have other funding sources. And so I am not going to support anything at the Byron Carlisle if it takes money away from going to the completion of the 72nd Street. Now, the CRA Advisory Committee just the other day passed, not unanimously, but very much close to that, an item to support the funding of 72nd Street. I think it was $106 million in that neighborhood. So I'm glad that they brought that support, and I am offering that same support. And so I'm on a quest to find that $18 million to finish that project, and I think I have a plan on how I can get there. And once I have that box checked, and at the same time, we can be working on a Byron Carlisle plan. Now, as the chair said, we had a very significant proposal, and I know I invested a lot of time getting all the parties to the table from both sides, the city and the developer, to get a deal. And it wasn't a perfect deal, but it was a good deal. And in many respects, it satisfied a lot of the requirements that people in the community said they needed. But for whatever reason, some people were afraid of the 30 people wearing bright T-shirts and trying to scare people that, that it was the wrong thing to do. My friends in North Beach that supported it are very upset that that deal was not accepted by the city. And so they remind me of that every day, that a good deal was put in front of the commission and it was turned down. So I am supportive of looking for opportunities at the Byron Carlisle. I don't think that structure can be saved. I think that we should have a new Byron Carlisle. The building is not worth saving, but the memories are. And Mr. Chair, to your point on the increase in the dollar amounts that have been quoted on that project have just gone up exponential. And quite frankly, I know that for $20 or $25 million, we're still not going to get there. That's a $30 to $35 million project when you start looking at the full build-out. I believe that. And so I believe, and I've put it on the record before, the way we accomplish this is with a public-private partnership. Now, some people don't like the prior deal that we had because they didn't have the entire footprint. The property was going to be sold. There are other ways to structure the deal. We can do a public-private where the city retains ownership of the land if that's a stumbling block. We can do it where we have the entire footprint of the ground floor. There are opportunities. The other thing is we can use CRA money for the Byron Carlisle, which we cannot use on the 72nd Street. So if I can use that money on the Byron Carlisle and I can't use it on the 72nd, why wouldn't I want to prioritize CRA money on the Byron Carlisle? And I think there are even opportunities for us to do bridge loans so that we don't have to wait 15 years to get something done on that property. So I am not supportive of today putting money in the budget because we still don't have the vision. And that's let me speak to that. In March of this year, I brought an item to the commission to do an independent survey, a poll, to see what people wanted, something that would be independent so we know it won't be biased by somebody setting up 10 fake email accounts and writing in what they want. That poll has taken several months to get through the process of approvals, and it's my understanding it's in the field now and it should be back. And while we've talked about charrettes and so forth, the charrettes are not as important as getting the independent poll first, because then we're going to have a basis to share in a charrette. This is what an objective poll has shown us as direction, and then we can start discussions from there. So I don't want to commit money to start drawing pictures and designing things when we don't even know the results of the poll. Now, I think, Commissioner Samuelin, that the results of that are going to be known very soon. We amend our budget throughout the year all the time. And so if it comes back that the majority of the people think that we should have a standalone building and not have a public-private, then that's one direction. If it comes back that there's a feeling that it should be a public-private partnership, that is a separate direction. And so I want to wait until we have clarity on that issue before I take the next step. And I think it would be foolhardy for us to start funding a design project when we don't even know what the public wants us to do in that space. Let's take our time. Let's do let's get the poll results. Let's do a charrette. Let's get a direction, and then we'll amend the budget. You know, $400,000 is a lot of money, and right now I'm trying to find $400,000 to fund a freebie program that got cut for the senior citizens. So if you want to spend $400,000 more in our budget, I'll support funding our senior citizens to have freebies. But I'm not going to fund this today. I'm not going to support it.
Yeah, and I'm with you, too, just so you know.
Fair enough. So
And I'm like-minded on everything you said about that survey and seeing what the community feedback will be before we actually spend money on concepts. Yeah.
So I appreciate my colleagues' perspectives. In the interest of time, given that there's not support, I'm not going to go point by point. I think it's fair to say my view of the history, my view of the situation does not completely align with what was just put forward. I do agree with a couple things I heard. The idea of using the CRA as a funding source, totally open to that. No reason we shouldn't consider that. And so whether it's however that comes about, I think that's a good idea. I also agree, and I'm glad, Commissioner Richardson, you know, you highlighted the importance of the CRA advisory group, which unanimously has recommended that we move forward. So with that said, I believe that right now, and maybe the administration can confirm, there's no funding in the budget, so if we do not take this step, there's no plan of attack, there's no direction, there's nothing that you're prepared to do. Is that accurate?
I mean, facilities. But.
Yeah, we have proposed using $400,000 from the resort tax.
I'm sorry. Sorry. If it was not the will of this body, and okay. Unless I do a few handstands, sounds like it probably won't today. You don't have another plan. This is your plan to move forward with the Byron Carlisle if that's the will of the commission. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So, colleagues, I just don't feel doing nothing is the right decision. Commissioner Richardson, I appreciate the survey. I think it's an important input. I want to look at it. And that's part of this process. Someone's got to catch the survey. Someone's got to listen to the community. Someone's got to give our administration direction. I'll be sharing a vision that the community put forward. Don't know if it's the right one, but it's a starting point. But I don't think we can keep kicking the can down the road. And I think as a body, we've made the point the things we know we're going to do should be in the budget. So I appreciate that it doesn't sound like I've got the votes today. It is on the agenda Thursday. It is a resolution. I think we need to do something about the Byron Carlisle because I don't want to be sitting here a few years from now if that ends up happening, say, gee, we never did that. We just never did. So with that, I appreciate that we're not going to have support at this meeting, but I really think it's important. I'll be making the same discussion on Thursday, and I hope we can decide to fund this conceptual design for the Byron Carlisle.
Well, and thank you for the comments. And again, it is a priority for me, but the can is not being kicked today. The can was kicked 6 months ago. That's when the can was kicked. And so I think it would be foolish, as I said, for us to fund a design project when we don't know the results of the survey. We don't even know, because it's a very different plan. If we come back that we want to do a public-private, which I believe is the only way we can afford to do this, then perhaps the potential new private partner would pay the design cost. And so we wouldn't spend a penny in that case. And so I don't want to spend taxpayer dollars when we don't even know what we're going to build. And as I said, if I'm going to spend $400 more that's not in the $400,000 more that's not in the budget, then I want us all to fund freebies for the seniors that are being cut. But we'll, I guess, have this conversation again on the 30th.
Yeah. I still think that a P3 is the way to go here because this is a lot of money. That we're not even close to having. The 72nd Street Aquatic Center, the nice thing about that is we have the majority of the money, and we definitely have a clear path on how to get the rest of the money. We're starting literally from ground zero here to find the kind of money we're talking about to do this. We rejected this in February. You realize right now they'd be going for approvals and probably breaking ground in early 2020 on this project. And, you know, we allowed a very small group of vocal minority folks in the community to push some of us around and to reject what I thought was a qualified bid. And now we're starting from ground zero, and now we're looking at $15 to $20 million of taxpayer money versus private developer money, which, by the way, would have had, well, I don't know, 150, 180 housing units for affordable housing, which is, you know, a priority for us to see built. I mean, it's amazing. The other thing that's really ironic is many of the folks that are encouraging us to tap the CRA money to build this are the same folks that were fighting against the creation of a CRA. I mean, the irony of this is, like, it magnifies how Miami Beach operates. A small group of vocal people that are anti-everything, right, attack everything, and then when it's rejected, like, oh, no, actually, we want it. You know,
some
of us allow those people to push us around, and that's why government stagnates.
Mr. Chair, may I be recognized, please?
Thank you, and I think we're all winding down here, which is just fine, and I appreciate my colleagues have a different view. That's the purpose of this. I do want to, though, come back to the 72nd Street, just so we have the numbers correct here. The original GEO bond was $54 million, and then we added, I believe, another 10. What is the current estimate for the 72nd Street project? But just from memory, what is that number?
You're referring to total budget?
Yeah.
The total budget is, I'm going off of memory here, 103. After we dropped the contingency in half, I want to say 103.
I think it was 105. So 64 to the 103, which didn't get a contingency because we're trying to get close, is about a $40 million gap. Round numbers?
Round numbers.
John, you're the CFO.
Once we netted out the parking component.
I'd really start the clock at 54, but just for the heck of it, if I add the 10 that somehow appeared, so 64
I think it
minus
was 37 million.
Yeah, 37. So, colleagues, as we think about gaps, here we're staring at a rigorous engineering analysis that is circa 15 to 20, and I appreciate it could be higher. It might be, Commissioner Richardson, to your point, higher, but that's a lot higher. So when we talk about relative gaps, the gap in the Byron Garlow, this is more manageable. I'd also make a point, and this could be a philosophical difference, and I appreciate that. I think job one for local government is to make its existing assets whole. In other words, you have to keep your house in order. Sort of like if you got a house, you got to make it right. You got to fix it before you build the addition. To be talking about building the addition, where Commissioner Richardson, to your comment, you said we might even be talking about condemning a building. I just don't even understand how we could do that. Now, I appreciate the difference, but for me, you better get your assets in line first before you earn the right for new projects. But I understand we have differences on that. Doesn't sound like I'm going to get this done today, but we'll be back on Thursday.
Well, let me if I could. I'm not suggesting that the building should be condemned. The building has been condemned. That's a fact. The building has been condemned, okay? It hasn't been legally the building.
Is that accurate?
It's not habitable, and it has not gone to an unsafe structures board, but it certainly could.
Well, it hasn't gone to a safe structure board, but it's my understanding that it has the title of being condemned. Now we can get clarification on that. Maybe I don't have that accurately, but you know, in terms of the percentage increases between 72nd and Byron Carlisle, there you can't compare the two. Everybody knew that the
Mark would depend on Harvard, so he doesn't understand the data.
Yeah, everybody knew that the GEO bond money for the 72nd wasn't going to be adequate, and that parking was going to be added, and all those things. And then we have to add the funding for capital improvements program because we add percentages there. So, and you know, some people say that Miami Beach and North Beach don't deserve to have this world-class design at 72nd Street, that we should scale it back. I differ with that. Miami Beach and North Beach deserves this over-the-top design because when it's done, I want every architect in the world to come and see it. I want every design magazine to photograph it. And I want everybody to have a nice time on that pool deck looking over the ocean. Miami Beach deserves this. And I don't want a surface swimming pool in a parking lot. I want this design. Miami Beach deserves it. And I'm committed to finding $18 million. And Commissioner Samuelin, you help me find that 18, and I'll help you find 18 for the Byron Carlisle.
Well, I appreciate that. Commissioner, if I may, thank you, and I appreciate all that. And I've tried to get the answer because the residents have been a little confused because the term condemn is floated. I think conceptually we're talking the same thing. We've got an uninhabitable building. You can't go in there. Whether it's technically condemned, I don't think that word has been used. But point taken, it's not usable. And let's be clear, if we do nothing, it might be demolished. I mean, frankly, I don't feel very good about that. And Commissioner Richardson, I appreciate that you have that passion for 72nd Street and passion for the Byron. So I appreciate that. But for me, I don't want to leave 71st Street and the Byron Carlisle unactivated. I don't want to wait years with do nothing. Doing nothing to me just isn't an option. So I'm not saying anything today about the 72nd Street project, though that is a conversation that, you know, we've had and we'll continue to have. But I'm saying right now, when I asked our professional staff if it was the will of the body to move forward, what should we do? This was their proposal, and I think North Beach deserves a Byron Carlisle. I think we should get it done, and I appreciate that we might have a different view today, but we'll keep chatting about it, and I hope we'll find a way to move forward. And I respect my colleagues for having a different perspective.
You know, just a word of politics here. I think what you're hearing, Commissioner Samuel, if you're listening, is your colleague, and I'm in the same position he is, there's a path forward for you here if you – we can all win if we cooperate. If we don't cooperate, there's going to be an impasse and the community is going to suffer. So I'm going to ask you, and you bring your little cohorts out there that are negative Nellies, if they're more open-minded towards the 72nd Street, which there is a path forward to get that done, you're going to find a much more accommodating group of colleagues to help you get the Byron Carlisle done, which we also want to get done in a first-class manner. But if you insist on being an intransigent, you can guarantee that this is going to be a quagmire and nobody wins. So you have an opportunity here to lead your little group of cohorts to a path to victory. But if you insist on being as difficult as you've been on 72nd Street, I think you're going to find the same exact thing on Byron Carlisle. That's some political advice.
I will just close the discussion, seeing again that I don't believe I have the votes today. I appreciate the political guidance. I'm always listening. I would just say that I don't believe the people who want the Byron Carlisle, and I know you were just talking about it. I think some of them are quite positive. I'm very positive about the prospect. So I would just want to make that clear. I look forward to continuing the dialogue. We've had a great meeting. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, I know you're winding down. There is one caller. Would you like to afford 1 minute?
Sure. Is it Wayne Roberts?
It is.
Wayne, you get the final word.
Thank you. I want to express my thanks to Mark Samuelin for thinking about, you know, the people of North Beach and Miami Beach and trying to move this forward. The more we wait, the more that building falls apart. And it brings us back to the main point, which is, why does city assets fall apart? Why do you not maintain the properties effectively to the point where it's condemned? It shows bad management. What's more, I'm very concerned that you want to sell off, you know, Champlain Towers property is valued at $130 million. Forget the reports that you got on the valuations of the library property. It's certainly, I've spoken to 50 people in commercial property, that property is worth $150 million. You know, and for future generations, if they need it.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. That's 1 minute.
I don't think I made a minute.
You did. Wait, what? One housekeeping matter, Mr. Chair. Just on item 5, which was your item for the 10-year vesting, is the direction to conclude the item at committee and take it up as part of the collective bargaining discussions when that happens in the coming year, or would you want to keep that in committee? You want to keep it?
A meeting.
That's for the other item, for the tier B to tier C.
No. We were going to have a workshop. I don't know what you want to call it, a workshop to discuss this, an executive session.
So that would be in the context of collective bargaining discussions when they come up.
Correct.
But the question is, do you want to conclude that item then?
Oh, yeah, we can conclude it so long as it's picked up and discussed. Yeah.
Okay. Very well.
Yeah.